But I'll be asking, does it really need an inquiry that will come out at more than £200 million to discover that? In other news, the Home Secretary catching the Mahmood of the nation.
To settle in this country forever is not a right, but a privilege, and it must be earned. Today, that is not the case.
Home Secretary Shabana Mahmood with another crackdown. How your takeaways could be delivered by robot. A move to try and get more soldiers who are currently living in cold, damp and mouldy conditions proper housing, plus up and away with Sir Never Hear Keir.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
As he jets off on his third foreign trip this month, we investigate how often Sir Keir is actually here. I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski with the answer.
Let's fly away.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, families who lost loved ones to COVID-19 are calling for safeguards to be fast-tracked after a damning report into the UK's response. An inquiry has found all four home nations were too slow to contain the virus. It also found the then Prime Minister Boris Johnson led a toxic and chaotic culture in number 10. Nadine Dorries was health minister in the Johnson government. She told LBC that she rejects those findings.
There's a reason why this country got the first vaccinations into arms, and it's the reason why this country was the first to come out of lockdown. And it was because Boris Johnson personally picked up the telephone. He pleaded with those research and drug companies not to take the vaccine to the US, to fund it here in the UK, to manufacture it here in the UK.
Ukraine's President Zelensky says he'll try and work with new US proposals to end the war with Russia. Details haven't been officially published, but it's thought it's heavily based on demands by Moscow. It reportedly includes Ukraine ceding more territory and reducing the size of its military. White House Press Secretary Caroline Levitt wouldn't confirm the details when speaking to reporters.
These talks are continuing. As always, I'm not going to litigate the details of this plan as it's ongoing and it's in flux. But the president supports this plan. It's a good plan for both Russia and Ukraine. And we believe that it should be acceptable to both sides. And we're working very hard to get it done.
The National Crime Agency has warned people buying cocaine could be indirectly helping Russian arms factories. The NCA says a money laundering network operating in the UK has bought a bank in Kyrgyzstan to evade Western sanctions. It says the funds are then being used to support Russian military efforts. LBC has learned thousands of call-outs were made by military families living in mouldy housing in the run-up to Remembrance Sunday. In the 4 weeks to November the 9th, more than 7,000 call-outs were made for emergency repairs. Ministers say £3.4 million will be spent on improving the UK's military housing. And prescription charges in England will be frozen next year. The charge for a single item will remain at £9.90. The Chancellor says the freeze will help with cost of living pressures. And just bring you a little bit of breaking news. The energy regulator Ofgem has just announced a 0.2% rise of the energy price cap. We'll have more details in our news bulletins. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 95.27. It closed up 20 yesterday. The pound buys $1.30 and a euro 13. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Driving can often be a bit ordinary. The commute, the weekly shop. But with SEAT, it's never an ordinary drive. Because right now you can get an extra £500 off the SEAT Ibiza and Arona on top of existing offers. Just order by the 15th of December and take delivery by the 31st of December. Search SEAT offers to find out more.
T's and C's and exclusion supply. UK retail customers 18 plus. New stock vehicles only, subject to availability. Saving including VAT applied to on the road price.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 4 minutes after seven on Friday, the 21st of November. A, and I quote, toxic and inexcusable leadership that lost 23,000 lives. That's it. Bye-bye, Boris. He will now never politically return. But I'll be asking, the cost's already nudging £200 million. The COVID inquiry will come out at above £200 million. if you were around at that time, we could see, you could see from another planet what a shambles it was. Did it need that amount of money spent on it? Or do you think, yes, to ram the point home with the appalling, chaotic, shambolic leadership of Johnson, Hancock and others, we needed to hear it? I'll take your views on that. In other matters, the concern over the rise in racism that's driving some of our overseas-trained doctors to leave the UK. Health Secretary Wes Streeting told me last week,
I think we've got a sort of a 70s, 80s style racism that's re-emerged, and we've got to put it back in its box. And government's got a role to play, but all of us have got a role to play.
In other news,
a man suspected of being murdered 5 years ago has turned up safe and well in a police station. I'm LBC's Alex Taylor-Brown with the story.
Later in the show, an investigation into Never Hear Keir, his 42nd foreign trip in 17 months, 11,000 round trip, taking him to about 200,000 miles since he became Prime Minister. Any chance he might have stay here in the UK? And here in the UK, the first eligible men come forward to join a trial testing the most promising screening techniques ever for prostate cancer. Professor Hashim Ahmed from Imperial College London spoke to me in March this year about this transformed trial launching today.
What I say to people is support the trial. And this trial is huge, supported by Prostate Cancer UK and the UK government to the tune of £42 million.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 60 60 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Not yet finished, but possibly the most devastating set of reports put out by the COVID inquiry yesterday. And LBC's reporter Fraser Knight was there and joins me now with the full story. Fraser, good morning.
Nick, good morning. Boris Johnson did not take COVID seriously enough and oversaw a culture in Number 10 described as being toxic and chaotic, according to the latest report. It was a culture which it said allowed and even encouraged advisers like Dominic Cummings to act with destabilising behaviours as they pushed ideas into law, it says, without any proper scrutiny. Too little, too late was the theme of this module's conclusion. A lockdown in March 2020 that came a week too late, it says, costing 23,000 extra lives. Baroness Heather Hallett, the inquiry chair, didn't hold back in her criticism.
None of the governments in the UK had adequately prepared for the challenges and risks that a national lockdown presented. They did not scrutinise sufficiently seriously its wider societal, workforce and economic impacts. In particular, the impact on the vulnerable and the disadvantaged, and the impact of school closures on children's education.
And you heard there the criticism of acting too slow also delivered towards the First Ministers of Scotland, Wales and Northern Ireland. Back in Downing Street, though, the report took aim at the way Boris Johnson reinforced a culture in which the loudest voices prevailed, it said, and the views of other colleagues, particularly women, often went ignored. It also claimed he kept changing his mind on whether he agreed with the scientific advisers around him. He delayed some very important decisions and didn't include the devolved leaders because of a lack of trust. Now, Deborah Doyle's mum died in a care home during COVID, and she said there needs to be better processes in place.
We can't just hope that we have better leaders in the future. The government must implement the safeguards recommended by the inquiry immediately. Otherwise, we are no safer now than we were during the darkest days in UK's living memory.
The inquiry also took aim at the amount of decisions and discussions that happened on WhatsApp, the number of messages, of course, deleted that the inquiry couldn't examine. But Nadine Dorries, who was, of course, health minister during the pandemic, told LBC that Boris Johnson did a good job.
There's a reason why this country got the first vaccinations into arms, and it's the reason why this country was the first to come out of lockdown. And it was because Boris Johnson personally picked up the telephone. He pleaded with those research and drug companies not to take the vaccine to the US, to fund it here in the UK, to manufacture it here in the UK.
This was report number 2 of 10, Nick, from the COVID inquiry, named last week, of course, as one of the most expensive public inquiries ever held at a cost of £160,000 a day. It'll be summer 2027, we're told, before the final report is finally released.
LBC's Fraser Knight reporting 9 minutes after seven. Let's turn to Stephen Reicher. He's Professor of Psychology at the University of St Andrews. He was on the SAGE subcommittee advising the government on behavioural science during the pandemic. You may recall that we spoke to him many times during those troubled times. He joins me now. Professor, is that the pandemic that you remember and recognise? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, this does take me back. you know, the notion of too little, too late, it's important to note that it's not new. I mean, it's not wisdom after the event. In 2020, the World Health Organization was saying, whatever you do, go early and go hard. And the problem is that if you dither and if you wait, the pandemic gets out of control and you have to do even more to stop it. And that's what we were doing. We're taking the brakes off, we're going too fast down the hill, and we're having to slam them on and put in extreme measures at the last moment. That happened in March 2020, it happened in September 2020. It kept on happening, this pattern of dithering. So I think that overall picture is right. My concern, if I have one with the report, is that it doesn't go deeper. It doesn't ask questions like, for instance, well, why did they dither? Why did they get it wrong? What does it tell us more generally about the relationship between government and the population? And to me, one of the fundamental things about what was going on was, if you like, a fundamental distrust that the government had of the population. If you like, a paternalism said, we're incapable of dealing with the pandemic, we can't be trusted, and therefore, rather than formulating a response with the population, things have got to be imposed on the population. Let me give you two examples of that, which I think are really important. There was a lot of talk about the delay of action in March 2020 and the excess lives lost. If anything, actually, the figures given by Baroness Hallett are on the low side. Other modelling studies, and modelling studies aren't perfect by any manner of means, but others point to 30 or even 40,000 excess lives lost. The reason for that delay was this notion of behavioural fatigue, which didn't come from the behavioural science experts. It came from somewhere within government. We don't know exactly where. And this was the notion that the population will be incapable of either understanding or dealing with the measures necessary to stop the spread, and therefore we've got to delay putting them in place. When that notion came out, and I still remember the next day in the advisory group in Spy B, us scratching our heads and thinking, where the hell did they get that notion from? It didn't come from us. And I think it reflects that wider paternalism, which says the public are a problem. The public are going to be, if you like, one of the difficulties in the pandemic, rather than, as turned out, actually the public are your best asset if you bring them together. So, for instance, over 12 million of us were in mutual aid groups where we helped each other. We helped elderly neighbours, we helped with the shopping and so on to get us through this pandemic. So that notion of behavioural fatigue, that delay that killed so many people, came from this paternalistic distrust of the public. And the other example, at the core of any strategy for infection is to make sure that if people are infected, they stay at home, they're isolated, they don't pass things on. And so the question is, what makes it difficult for people to self-isolate? And actually, it's a very difficult thing to do financially apart from anything else. So why was support not put in place? Time after time, again in the advisory group, we scratched our head and said, why on earth are they spending all this money on the track and trace system, but not putting money into actually allowing people to self-isolate? It's flushing money down the toilet, if you like. And I still remember the day when Jeremy Hunt, who was chairing a parliamentary committee, asked this question to Matt Hancock, the health secretary, and he said, because people will game the system. He claimed that people would deliberately get infected to get the paltry amount of money that was on offer. So again, that distrust of the public fed into an inability to do the things that were necessary to control the pandemic. And one of the great problems we have of politics at the moment is distrust, the distrust that people have in politicians. And in many ways, I think it stems from COVID, and it stems from the fact that if you want the public to trust the government have got to start off by trusting the public and treating us as a partner. And we didn't. And it's an ongoing problem, and it's something we've got to deal with.
Professor, thank you for such a cogent and devastating summing up of what you've heard. Stephen Reich, who's Professor of Psychology at the University of St Andrews, sat on the SAGE subcommittee advising the government on behavioural science during the pandemic. So that very much is the medical scientific side of it. It's on the political side, it's bye-bye Boris. Off you go, Bojo. He can never politically return. But coming up after the news, this is when we get to it, it's predicted to be £208 million pounds. Is the reality that we spent a lot of our money that we all knew? And if the idea is that we prevent any future disasters, I hate the expression, but lessons will be learned. There's not a lot of lessons, are there? What should we take from this that might help us or help our children, God forbid, or our grandchildren in the future? We'll be exploring that with health commentator Jamie Jenkins. Also later in the show,
thousands of military families were living in houses unfit for habitation in the weeks leading up to Remembrance Day. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live with the story.
Plus, as a former Prime Minister rightfully comes into condemnation, Boris Johnson, the current one ain't doing too well either. Never hear Keir racking up more air miles. An investigation. You will be staggered at just how much time he has spent out of the country. It's 7:15, LBC News Headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in gas and electricity prices from next month after Ofgem's announced its latest price cap. Sir Keir Starmer says the government will carefully consider the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. And the White House says President Trump has given his backing to a new plan to negotiate an end to the war in Ukraine. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M4 westbound. Two lanes are closed because of emergency repairs after a lorry caught fire yesterday between Junction 6 for Windsor and Junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead. There are queues on the M25 anti-clockwise. There's a lane closed because of an accident between Junction 28 for the A12 and Junction 27 for the M11. On the M25 anti-clockwise, there are also queues after a car broke down earlier before Junction 23 for the A1M. On the Tube, there's no service on the District line between Earls Court and Ealing Broadway. That's because of some problems with the signals. There's no service on the Northern Line southbound from Camden Town to Battersea Power Station because of a fire alert. And on the trains, Southwestern Railway services aren't stopping at Queenstown Road. That's because of some problems with the signals.
This is LBC.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Cybersecurity matters more than ever for businesses across the UK. LBC's been exploring how cyber attacks happen, who's behind them, and the steps you can take to protect your business.
300,000 businesses and about 30,000 charities have at least had one cybercrime incident in the last 12 months. 25% of small businesses can be quite devastating for some organisations, and one or two do go out of business as a result. And ultimately, if you're connected to the internet, there's a risk.
Watch the full interview on our free Global Player app. Thanks to BT Business. LBC.
Tonight's EuroMillions jackpot is £132 million. It's so exciting, I could do the splits. Oh, should have stretched first. Get in tonight's EuroMillions draw. Play on app.
Estimated jackpot. Account terms, rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
At Pets in a Pickle, we're here when it matters most. For fuss-free pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk. Nick Ferrari at Breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
19 minutes after 7, headlines in a moment, but you can probably guess what most of them are. So let's go straight to Jamie Jenkins, health commentator, former head of health statistics at the ONS, regularly helps us with health matters. Well, it is, as I've said already, good to have you on, Jamie. It's absolutely devastating work by the inquiry. If we allow for that political expression, lessons will be learned. Are we getting enough lessons, in your view? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. Well, I'm not really sure we're getting many lessons at all. I think a lot of the things that are coming out is a lot of what we could have predicted, probably just me and you sitting down and going through what happened. It's no coincidence that they're coming out saying that 23,000 lives may have been saved had we locked down earlier. The critical thing there, Nick, is we couldn't really track the modelling at the time because they were putting these devastating models out saying certain things may happen and then interventions were in place. But later in the pandemic, the SAGE modelling, again, I think it was in the Omicron variant towards the back end of 2021, there was calls for restrictions then. They were predicting up to 3,000 deaths a day if Boris didn't do anything. Economically, we couldn't. There was lockdown fatigue, so they didn't do a lockdown then. And the reality was deaths peaked at 200 a day, so they were 93% lower. So I treat this 23,000 number with a great deal of caution, because when you look at the facts later on, when we could check the modelling versus reality, it was much, much lower. And things like, you know, I think we can all agree there was probably chaos in Downing Street, chaos across the governments. You know, this pandemic did hit us quite quickly. And ultimately, you know, a lot of countries just followed each other. I think Italy started, then we had parts of Europe started going into lockdowns. Sweden didn't. And then when you look at all-cause mortality over the course of a couple of years, they've actually fared quite better. So I think lessons learned, probably some, but the cost of this and the lessons learned is probably over much, I think over cost.
Let's finish our conversation with one final number or a couple of numbers. So this has cost 190, probably about £192 million. It's going to come in eventually at least £208 million. Jamie Jenkins, is that money well spent?
I don't think it's money well spent. You know, the amount of interviews they've been doing, they've been calling Boris back, the ministers back many, many times. You know, I think ultimately, Nick, they're saying that, you know, we didn't consider the schools and the school clubs. I'm a football coach, Nick. We were allowing people to go to school. We weren't allowing them to go out and play football and things. It was just, you know, some common sense would have told you how to manage this. The key thing here is not what we did. Let's look at other countries across the world. What did they do? And I think just look at the best in class. Let's look at the facts. That's where you're going to learn more for the future, by a comparison of different approaches, not specifically focusing on what Downing Street did.
All right, how's your team doing that you coach, Jamie?
Well, we're doing quite well, Nick. We're third in the league, beat the team who was top last week. So hopefully a good season ahead for the young under-13-year-olds. So
the which under-13? Say it again, sorry.
Yeah, so in South Wales, Brunner Junior. So okay. We're on a good roll. So
good luck. You. Next time we speak, let's hope you've won the league or you've won a cup or something like that. Jamie, thanks for coming on. Jamie Jenkins, health commentator, former head of health stats at the ONS and football coach. Coming to your calls in just a moment. Graham, you'll be the first caller. Quickly then, the headlines. Well, from the Mirror to the Times, they pick up with one of those very punchy words, inexcusable. That's the Daily Mirror with a picture of Boris Johnson looking as though he doesn't know what the heck is going on. And there's Boris Johnson on the front page of the Times looking like, heck, he doesn't know what's going on. Inexcusable is the word again. Pandemic delays cost 23,000 lives. Equally devastating, the aspect that we are going with, in a way, the Daily Telegraph, the £200 million COVID, I told you so. Please don't think for a moment I am not negating the impact of this for one second. And I know that you know that I have known Boris Johnson for many years because we were both journalists, we are both journalists, whatever you want to say. I'm not trying to let him dodge the bullet. That's over. He can never make a political return. I'm asking, did we need to spend, or we will spend, 208 million quid? Really? Last couple of headlines for you. The Daily Mail, betrayal of our children. They're going on the fact, of course, that really, and as we go through history, I think that will be probably one of the biggest points to make. So it takes something not to go on the front page of The Sun, but guess what? The BBC more headlines. A Strictly star has been arrested on suspicion of raping a woman after a BBC event. When you think what's going on at Strictly Come Dancing, shouldn't they just rename it Crime Watch? That would seem to make more sense, wouldn't it? The LBC app has details of the COVID inquiry. Let's pick one other at random. It's the Huffington Post, which also goes, actually, with the word inexcusable. So that does seem to be the word. And I'm not making excuses. Did we need to spend 208 million quid? Graham in Clacton. Money well spent. Morning.
I don't think so, mate. Sorry, but...
Yes, so go ahead. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, I don't think so. No, Nick, you're saying about lessons being learnt and that is your premise, isn't it? Really?
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Facts, right? Back in 2016, the government carried out a national pandemic preparedness exercise, and it was known as SINUS.
That's right. Remembered. I'd forgotten that, sir. The purpose was to
test how the UK would cope with a serious outbreak of infectious diseases.
Yes, that's right. Yes.
The findings were concerning, and the country was left wanting in loads of different areas with regards to healthcare, emergency response infrastructures.
Yeah.
And nothing was done about it. Absolutely, Jack was done about it.
Right.
Right? At the end of the day, when you say lessons will be learnt, no, they will not.
What angers you the most, lastly, Graham, because you're obviously a plain-speaking bloke, is it the utter chaos over which Boris Johnson presided? Is it this tissue of lies that some governments have put out since? Is it the amount of money we're spending? What really grinds your gears?
The worst thing for me, we keep blaming these politicians, right? The people that know nothing, really, they just get voted in because they say, at the end of the day, when they go to the voting system, they come out with all these brilliant ideas that they're going to do and all that.
Mm.
For me, right, the civil service has got to play a part. The civil service are people that are employed within these areas full-time, and they're there all the time. So no matter who you've got in and out of government, doesn't matter. But the infrastructure that's there all the time, they've got to take the blame for this, because then they're the people that actually are there to make sure that everything's ticking over, whether you've got lunatic governments in or not.
Graham, I have enjoyed our conversation. Have a good weekend. Do please stay in touch. I love the candour which you brought to the... to our chat. 7:26. Let's go to social media. Neil says, Boris finished. He's still more popular than Starmer. JJ in Deal, Kent, I'm not a Boris fan, but it's ridiculous to blame him, and it is a complete waste of money. Terry, you're the next caller on that. So let's turn to a politician who perhaps is more catching the mood, or should that be the Mahmood of the generation. That's our Home Secretary, talking more about the crackdown. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, joins us now with all the details. Natasha, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the Home Secretary introducing a new set of requirements if you want to stay in Britain forever. She's going to make migrants wait far longer to do so. This announcement is targeted at the so-called Boris wave. You'll remember that migration rules were loosened around 2021. We saw more than 600,000 people arrive, many under a health and social care visas. Many of them also brought their dependents, their children and family members to. This route was closed earlier this year after concerns that it was being abused. So the government said yesterday they will make these people wait far longer to achieve what's called settled status. Usually that is basically standard after 5 years in the country at the moment. This is going to now be extended up to 10 years, 20 years or even further. That will be some of the toughest rules in Europe. And if you come here illegally or outstay your visa, you could wait up to 30 years. The Home Secretary has said that becoming a permanent citizen is a right, not a privilege. She outlined the four things that everybody will have to do in order to settle in Britain in future.
Firstly, the applicant must have a clean criminal record. Secondly, they must speak English to A-level standard. Thirdly, they must have made sustained national insurance contributions. And finally, they must have no debt in this country.
But she also set out a number of ways that people can gain settled status sooner.
Those who speak English to a degree level standard could qualify for a 9-year path to settlement. Those paying the higher rate of tax could qualify at 5 years, while those on the top rate could qualify after 3, the same as those on global talent visas. Those who work in a public service, including doctors, teachers, nurses, would qualify after 5 years.
Now, yesterday, Nick, the Tories were pretty welcoming of this idea, saying that Labour were copying many of their ideas. The government also said they will look at whether to restrict benefits entirely to just British citizens. So that is something that you won't be able to get until you've been in the country for at least 6 years at the present. That's something that the Tories and Reform say should happen, but it will be very controversial for many Labour MPs. The Home Secretary hopes this will start from April next year. Some of these will require new law changes, so the new Home Secretary will have to do her best to try to keep her colleagues on side for that.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting 7:29. Terry is in Bournemouth. Money well spent or not, Terry? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I'm not qualified to say whether it's well spent because...
Well, you are. It's your money, mate.
Well, it is.
Yeah, unless you don't pay tax.
The problem is we need the inquiry because it becomes a focal point. If you cast your mind back to things like the Piper Alpha Oil disaster,
yep.
Clapham Rail disaster. I mean, I was working on Network Southeast at the time. And these inquiries that ensue, they shouldn't have to happen, but they do happen. I would question how we go about doing inquiries and the level of expenditure, but I still think they need to be done because they need to
But what did you learn, Terry? You said you were working for the railways at the time of Clapham.
Yeah.
What was learned? What was changed? What happened as a result of that inquiry? That's what I'm driving at, Terry.
Well, because of the inquiry, it went into great depth and they found out that there were certain procedures in the signalling department. They weren't taping wires properly. They weren't insulating things properly. And there was a distinct lack of maintenance. It's a different area.
No, I know.
However, but the point I'm trying to make is that if we don't have a focused inquiry like we have had in the past, everything just remains as conjecture.
And so, Terry, lastly, just reminding everybody, the Clapham Rail disaster was in 1988. 35 people lost their lives. Things got better as a result. Working on the
railway. They haven't got fantastically better, but they have got better. We went, I'm not with them anymore, but
no.
We went for a massive change in awareness, in safety, the training levels, the levels of procedure to stop accidents happening again.
I will leave it there, Terry. Have an enjoyable weekend down by the seaside. Thanks for your input on that. I'm sorry, mate, but I'm already late to the news, so I have to get my skates on. Coming up later in the show, a former Prime Minister rightfully under attack, and a current Prime Minister not doing a lot better.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
It's fantastic to be here with you in Berlin.
This iconic setting, the Amazon rainforest. We agreed a plan here in Samoa to boost investment across the Commonwealth.
Fly with me, let's fly away.
Right, there's no chance of going to Swindon or Scunthorpe rather than Samoa as their Prime Minister, or is that too much to ask? 7:31, you're listening to Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase, roughly around 28 pence, will take effect at the start of January. Sir Keir Starmer says the government is carefully considering the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. It concluded there would have been 23,000 fewer deaths in England had the lockdown been introduced earlier than March 2020. And Ukraine's President Zelensky says he'll try and work with the new US proposals to end the war with Russia. Details haven't been published, but it's thought it'll heavily be based on demands by Moscow. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest by the afternoon, a high of 9 degrees.
On the latest episode of The News Agents,
we will be speaking to Nigel Farage's biographer, Michael Crick, about whether or not he believes Nigel Farage was racist and anti-Semitic when he was a schoolboy. Farage denies all those allegations.
Get the latest episode of The News Agents with Emily Maitlis, John Sopel and Lewis Goodall. Listen or watch on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
Great to see you back at Specsavers. Okay, could you read out the letters on the wall for me?
Yep. D-E-A-L-S? Yeah, D-E-A-L-S. Deals.
Oh, right. Our Black Friday deals are eye-catching, but the letter chart's over here.
Oh, sorry.
At Specsavers, we've got all sorts of unmissable Black Friday deals, like up to £50 off one pair of designer glasses. Offer ends on 7th of December 2025. Conditions apply. Ask in store for details.
Things are really heating up in the country's smallest house.
Dad!
Squealed Mia Mouse.
We could save around £100 by setting the boiler flow temperature to 60 degrees.
And turning radiators down in rooms we don't use.
Interrupted Mo.
Yes, Mo.
Turn them down, not off, said Mia.
Plus finding and blocking drafts,
said Mo.
Should save enough to increase our allowance.
A little saves a lot. You could save around £100 a year off your energy bills with three tips at gov.uk/cleanenergy.
This could be the best Christmas ever. Christmas Cash Call is here with a life-changing £100,000 to be won. Enter this week's draw before 5pm today and you could get a call with £100,000. Christmas Cash Call. Text radio to 822 00 to enter now. Text costs £2.50 plus your standard network charge. 18 plus UK only global network competition. Full rules and free entry at christmascashcall.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
7:34, we'll come back to the Hallett inquiry. Say it again, sorry. Okay, but as we're talking numbers, I'm going to give you an Ashes update. You can tell we are literally ringing you as it happens. Oh dear, day one, England all out for 172. One of their lowest scores. They're hardly motoring, though, as my cricket correspondent Clive just said in my ear. They're hardly motoring. They're 19 for one, and they've been at the crease for a long time. So we'll do Ashes updates throughout the course of the Ashes series. Ashes, day one, the numbers. England all out 172. So much for Basball. Australia 19 for one. Got how many overs? So we'll update that. If we're talking numbers, let's bring Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, into the conversation. And we've got numbers regarding the energy price cap. Christian, morning to you. What are they? What do they mean?
Good morning. Yeah, the energy price cap, which, let's remember, sets the maximum price that can be charged for each unit of gas and electricity, so it doesn't cap the overall bill, so if you use more, you will pay more, has risen slightly. There were people were actually expecting it to come down a bit, but there's been a very modest increase, which is going to add a small amount to the average bill. And why has it increased if wholesale prices in the energy market have come down? I can hear people shouting in the car and at the breakfast table. Well, it's a good question, but the fact of the matter is those markets are volatile and there are temporary costs that are now feeding into British bills. That includes the extension of the Warm Home Discount Scheme, and it also includes a small levy to help fund our new nuclear power projects as well. So we're all in it together in that regard. But I appreciate this is a topic on most people's minds. The temperatures this week have been pretty chilly. But it's not going to, without being glib about it, the increase is probably not going to break the bank, but it was a surprise to see it go up a little bit.
Something that could break the bank are borrowing, or rather our borrowing costs. What figures have come in on that, Christian?
Yeah, bad news and bad numbers in the cricket, bad numbers in public finances this morning. The latest government borrowing figures for October have just been released. We are just days away from the budget, of course. That's the context. It's not good news. It's not good news for the Chancellor. Anyway, the monthly deficit hit £17.4 billion. This is the difference between what the government spends and what it brings in tax receipts. Now, higher than usual tax receipts after all those tax hikes have meant that it was borrowing came in a little bit lower than the previous month, but it also came in higher than had been forecast. That's £3 billion above what the OBR forecast in March, and it is the third highest October figure on record. Total borrowing so far in the fiscal year to date is at £116 billion, and that is about £10 billion over the OBR's projection of where they thought it would be at this point. So borrowing is up, taxes are about to go up. I'm afraid this is the context for Wednesday's rather brutal budget.
Why might Metal Mickey be delivering your takeaway?
I do remember I used to live in Bermondsey a few years back and we used to see these...
There's no need to show off, old man, but do go on.
Well, yeah, it was a different time in my life. No children for a start. But one of the things we used to see in Bermondsey, apart from loads of other people with no children, were robot delivery vehicles. We're going to see a lot more of them. Well, certainly you will if you live in Leeds, because Uber Eats has teamed up with the company Starship Technologies and are going to roll out more, many, many more units of these robot delivery vehicles, AI-powered delivery vehicles. Starting in December, Leeds will see a bit of an influx of these look like sort of cool boxes on wheels cruising around. People say, oh, what does this mean for jobs? What does it mean for people who cycle around towns and moped around towns? It's a fair comment, I suppose. At the end of my street now, there was, on an average night, probably about 20 people sitting on e-bikes and scooters waiting to deliver these things. So it's possible that in the future there'll just be a row of these delivery robots instead.
Lastly, a story that's running City AM online. Eurotunnel, see you in court. Who's that challenge to?
Yeah, they're not happy. The firm behind the Channel Tunnel, which was going to build a major new freight terminal in East London and expand freight transport links into France. They said they're not going to go ahead with that, and furthermore, they're pretty furious. They're going to take some legal action if they can against the government. This is all because of the government's business rates overhaul. Bigger sites, including places like airports and these new mooted freight terminals, as well as supermarkets, are going to pay higher business rates in order to fund a bit of pressure taken off smaller businesses. Well, the boss of Eurotunnel told CityAM yesterday that it's impossible to understand these increases. It's going to add millions and millions of pounds to the tax liability they pay in this country, and they're just not going to go ahead with it. They were planning a major investment scheme and a major overhaul of a site in East London, which they say at the moment has become unviable because of these business rate changes.
Thanks, sir. Enjoy your weekend. Christian May is editor-in-chief at City AM, 7:39. Dan's in High Wycombe. Dan, is this money well spent? £208 million, 3.5 years. Good morning.
Good morning. I'm fuming. It's this madness. But I totally respect that there does definitely have to be an inquest, inquiry, and to make sure that it doesn't happen again. But even just thinking about it and working it out with basic maths, that's like 800 people a year working on this.
Yep. £160,000 a day.
That's right. That's madness. There's a lot of people on it. For what reason? Surely even half of the amount of people or half that money would be still acceptable enough to do the inquiry.
It's whether, at the end, what annoys you most about the United Kingdom's handling of COVID? Is it, as we say again, the chaos? Is it the infighting? Is it Prosecco and parties? Or is it the cost of the Hallett inquiry?
Right now, the cost. The way cost of living is now, the cost. What they did at the time is still not acceptable, but we've got through it. We're here now. The inquiry's there. And that's the best we can do at the moment. But
Dan, thank you for that. James in Norwich. James, what annoys you the most? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think it's the amount of time this inquiry is taking.
3.5 years.
Bloodletting. Bloodletting was a medieval practice for over 2,000 years.
Yes.
Because no one ever compared the results to what other countries were doing. There was no comparison. It's just great having the inquiries going on for 7 years. But feedback needs to be spontaneous, otherwise you can't learn from it. We're looking at things we did it's 7 years ago, right? When the time the inquiry's finished and we've got the results, we'll be looking at something what happened 7 years ago. The people who made those decisions won't really remember why they made those decisions in the first place. If someone's made a mistake or something's done wrong, feedback needs to be given in a very short period after that time. Otherwise, you can't learn from it.
Well said, James. Thank you. More calls on this. I'm suggesting it's farewell, Boris. Sarah doesn't agree. It's not bye-bye, Boris. Boris did a good job, says Sarah. We're going to look at his handling in more detail later in the show, by the way. Staying with this comes in from Martin in Uxbridge. The UK counted deaths with COVID. Others counted deaths by COVID. Our figures were always going to be higher. My father died with, but not of COVID. My condolences for you on that. Morris says, leave Boris Johnson alone. He was doing his best. It's just that his best was no good. We'll return to that. George, you'll be the next caller. But to an extraordinary story, you might have heard details of yesterday. A Bradford shopkeeper missing since 2020. This story taking an extraordinary twist. Police revealed he's reappeared safe and well 48 hours after he'd been declared dead, and there were a number of arrests. Alex Taylor-Brown is LBC's Yorkshire correspondent and joins us now with more details. Alex, good morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, yeah, Ismail Ali was 46 at the time of his disappearance. This was on May the 29th, 2020. He was last seen leaving his place of work, Gullum Food Stores, where I am here on Cumberland Road. This is on the west side of Bradford. On Monday, West Yorkshire Police told us how five people, three women and two men, had been arrested on suspicion of Mr. Ali's murder. Well, on Wednesday, Nick, Mr. Ali turned up to a police station in Bradford alive and well. We're told that he is safe as well. CCTV from the time he went missing show Mr. Ali wearing a red hoodie and black trousers. His disappearance featured in a number of appeals over the last 5 years, with police saying his family were concerned for his welfare. His family has been informed of this latest development, and police say he's safeguarded as necessary checks are made. Now, following the arrests on Monday, three properties were searched here where large amounts of cash were seized, and those arrested remain on bail for money laundering offences. Now, earlier this week, Detective Inspector Tom Hillier, the senior investigating officer in this case, said after extensive inquiries, we now suspect that Ismail Ali is no longer alive and we suspect that he may have been murdered. West Yorkshire Police say now officers are trying to work out the full circumstances surrounding his disappearance as he turns up safe and well. I've just been chatting to a gentleman here, Nick, who didn't want to be recorded, but he was saying, are you here to cover the Mr. Ali story? And he said how he was always there in the shop. He was incredibly friendly. This was, of course, COVID times when he disappeared, and as you know, people sort of chat and speculate, everyone thought that he may have gone to India and just lost contact. But he has turned up in a police station this week, and a bizarre story, Nick, that at the moment leaves a lot more questions than answers.
I sense we shall be returning to Alex Taylor-Brown with more on this story, LBC's Yorkshire correspondent. Alex, thank you for that. More of your calls coming in. George, we're going to talk about the COVID inquiry. It's the cost aspect we're looking at now. It's going to come in at least £208 million later in the show. Off you go, Bojo. No political return. That's what all the political obituary writers are saying today. We'll look at that in more detail. Staying with politicians currently in post, Health Secretary Wes Streeting on this show last week talking about the concerns of racism within the NHS.
I think we've got a sort of a 70s, 80s style racism that's re-emerged, and we've got to put it back in its box. And government's got a role to play, but all of us have got a role to play.
That's Wes Streeting, the man who would be Prime Minister. What of the man who is Prime Minister?
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
As he jets off on his third foreign trip this month, we investigate how often Sir Keir is actually here. I'm LBC's Alan Zizinski with the answer.
Let's fly away.
7:45 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Gas and electricity bills will rise by another 28 pence a month from January after Ofgem's announced a surprise increase in its price cap. Sir Keir Starmer says the government will carefully consider the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. And thousands of call-outs were made by military families living in damp and mouldy housing in the run-up to Remembrance Sunday. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest. A high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The queues on the M25 anti-clockwise. Traffic has been held because of an accident between junction 28 for the A12 and junction 27 for the M11. There are queues on the M4 westbound. Two lanes are closed between junction 4 for Heathrow and junction 4B for the M25 because of an accident. It is also slow on the M4 westbound because of emergency repairs after a lorry caught fire yesterday between junction 6 for Slough and junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead, so two lanes stay closed. It is slow in Acton. Southfield Road is partly blocked both ways at Carlton Road. A bus has broken down. It's heavy in New Malden. West Barnes Lane is blocked both ways. The level crossing isn't working at Motspur Park. On the tube, there are minor delays on the Northern Line, and on the train, Southern have cancellations between Victoria and Sutton.
This is LBC.
At this time of year, we know you're snowed under. But with Halfords' biggest ever Black Friday sale, you handle the shopping, we'll handle the saving. Grab up to 50% off our motoring and cycling must-haves, including tools, in-car tech, bikes and more. Whether it's Christmas gifts, everyday essentials, or just an excuse to treat yourself, we've got you covered. Pop to your local Halfords today or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See halfords.com for details.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helps advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Train to Brighton with the besties. Immaculate vibes, as always. But I bet my ice skating is going to be pure chaos. Oh, Em, you better hold my hand. Oh, I'm going up. No, styled it out. I've got this.
Last one to the other side buys the hot chocolate.
Back on the train. Only fell twice.
Low-key legend.
We have to do this every year.
Download the Southern Railway app to book tickets and save a third off group travel and off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story.
Do you ever feel like getting back under your duvet in the middle of the day? Ferroglobin is a great-tasting liquid formula with iron, which contributes to the reduction of tiredness and fatigue and normal formation of haemoglobin. Ferroglobin from Vitabiotics at Boots, pharmacies and vitabiotics.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before 8. Now, everyone knows there's such a focus on the economy and there's such a focus on growth. The government getting into power promising there would be growth, and sadly at the moment it's not delivering, but could this be something that's about to change? New jobs? Billions of pounds of investment? Let's get more from Leicester West MP and Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology, Liz Kemble, who joins me on the line. Good to have you on, Secretary of State. What is it you and your colleagues are announcing today, and how will it spur growth, do you imagine? Good morning.
So we are today announcing a new AI growth zone in South Wales. That's a centre of expertise where we get the infrastructure, but also the businesses and universities work together to create future jobs and growth. This will bring over £10 billion of investment into that part of the country. You know, an area that led the industrial revolution, now driving this technological revolution. We're also announcing more support for British businesses because, you know, we hear a lot about these big US tech companies, and I welcome their investment in this country, but I also want to see more homegrown British companies move from small startups to scale up, and also do more to back our brilliant scientists and researchers to use the power of AI to come up with new drugs, treatments, medicines and other services that will really help solve some of the big problems we face. The bottom line is this, I think, Nick, that there's no path to future better growth in this country without science and technology at the fore. It really is one of our great British success stories, and we've got to do even more to back it and turbocharge it in future.
How can AI be utilised in the field of medicines and drugs then, Secretary of State?
So we heard this week that Imperial College and the Fleming Institute are using AI to speed up research into things like, you know, resistant antibiotics. You know, we're using more and more of these antibiotics and they're not working so well. And we heard how AI can speed that up and do research that might have taken a decade in 48 hours. Yesterday, when I was actually in Cardiff and meeting people working in AI, new tools to do better medical imaging so that we can identify treatments and diseases earlier, looking at how we use AI to better assess the energy efficiency of homes and big public buildings to bring the costs of bills down. There are all sorts of different ways that we can use AI. I think perhaps some of your listeners will be sort of worried about, what is this technology? What will it mean for me, my family, and my job?
Yeah, exactly.
But you know, we heard again this week, Sage, a brilliant UK company based in the Northeast, where we've got another AI growth zone, that is providing tools to small and medium-sized businesses to speed up dealing with all the red tape and bureaucracy, to free people's time up to do what they want, which is to go out and sell their products and services. You can use this technology in lots of different walks of life. I think it is a major driver of growth in future, but we've got to do more to back those British businesses.
You're not the Chancellor, but you mentioned growth a couple of times. It's not happening, Secretary of State. Indeed, it's gone a little bit backwards. Why?
Well, I think we are proud to see we've got stronger growth in this country than any other in the G7, but is it strong enough? Hell no. We have to do more, which is why
we're not
we
the
are
strongest
making,
in the G7 anymore, but, of course, after 2 weeks ago, Secretary of State. We've
but we've had, in the first half of this year, that was good. Do we need to do better? Yes. And that is why we are making this announcement today on backing this new technology, which we think is a key driver in future. Last week, alongside another AI growth zone in North Wales, we announced three small modular nuclear reactors, again bringing billions of investment in and creating 6,500 new jobs. We need to take that immediate action and plan for the long term too. It is tough, but we're determined to deliver.
But all the figures, respectfully, are going against you and your colleagues. You've mentioned energy there and your colleague Ed Miliband. We've learnt this morning, you might not have heard because I know you've been busy, but the energy price cap has now risen, Ofgem said earlier this morning. So there's another increase in my listeners' and your voters' costs, Secretary of State. It's going against you, respectfully.
So I'd say two things on that, Nick. Your listeners will be really worried about their bills, especially as it's freezing cold out there right now. So we are taking immediate action. We are doubling the number of households who will have access to the Warm Homes Discount Scheme, £150 off your bill this winter for any family or household who's on universal credit, often very hard-working people. Short-term action to help bring the cost of bills down. But in the long run, Nick, the only way we're going to get off this sort of volatile roller coaster of fossil fuels is to build our own clean energy here in this country, whether that's solar, wind farms or nuclear. These big three small modular nuclear reactors we're going to build in North Wales, just the start. You know, we've got to have short-term action because basically people are desperately worried now, but take the long-term decisions too.
As we're talking about tough decisions here in the United Kingdom, Secretary of State, how concerned are you that the Prime Minister doesn't seem to be here as often as he might? In 17 months, he's now on his 42nd foreign trip, close to 200,000 air miles. Why isn't he here more?
Because he's delivering for Britain.
How?
I mean,
the country's going backwards.
Let me tell you this. Well, for the G20, we've announced £400 million worth of deals, export deals, that will back British businesses. The deal with Turkey and Typhoon Jets, 20,000 more jobs here. You, Nick, will rightly ask me what we're doing to tackle small boats. How the hell do we think we can do that if we don't work with our partners right across
Europe?
But we're
not tackling it, respectfully.
Well, we absolutely are.
The numbers are up. 800 came last weekend.
But we're also increasing the number of removals. We've got a deal now with France that we need to push forward on. And as you know, Shabana announced a series of really important, tough but fair measures to deal with the increasing number of people, asylum seekers and illegal immigration. But my view is, how do we back British businesses? They've got to be able to export to the rest of the world. How do we create more British jobs? We need to get international investment right here in the UK.
We don't need a foreign secretary as well, then, do we?
Yes, we do, Nick. That's what are you on about?
Why can't Yvette Cooper do some of this?
Because Keir Starmer wants international investment in this country to create jobs.
But we're losing 1,000 jobs a day, Secretary of State.
Today, we're announcing a package
Wales. Last week, the figures came out, courtesy, many would say, of your colleague Rachel Reeves' disastrous national insurance policies. We're losing 1,000 jobs a day,
but today,
the Prime Minister now is always on a plane.
Today, I'm announcing a deal for South Wales, a part of the country that led the Industrial Revolution and that has struggled for jobs, a new plan for a brilliant AI growth centre that will create more than 5,000 jobs. We are taking action for the long term. I know people are worried right here, right now. Next week in the budget, I am absolutely sure you will see more about how we back our brilliant British entrepreneurs, how we grow this economy and we deal with the cost of living. It is tough out there. I know that is. And we need to provide immediate help, but that longer term help too. And I tell you what, I want a Prime Minister who champions Britain in the rest of the world, gets that inward investment, champions British businesses to export. And if we weren't doing that, you'd say you need to get on and do your job as a world leader, and that is what Keir is doing.
Finally, something you probably don't know. is that my late
mother... I'm sure there's lots of things
no,
that I don't
that my late mother was raised in the great city of Leicester.
Oh.
Yes, in Leicester. Yes. Dulverton Road, if it's important.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
What's happened to the foxes?
Oh... That is the thing that many people will be thinking about now. Yeah, that is a real concern for us. I remember not long after I actually became the MP for Leicester West, our great Premier League win.
Oh, I was at Vicky Park.
Were you
Yeah, of course I was.
Did you see? Oh, my God.
I'm shocked, you know. You didn't know I had such knowledge of Leicester.
And when they did their amazing parade, that beautiful
hot sunny day.
God. It was incredible, wasn't it?
It seems a long way off.
You know, ups and downs, Nick, ups and downs. But
ups
if you're a true fan, so you'll never let that go.
Liz, I've enjoyed... Liz Kendall, I'm sorry, I don't want to be impolite. Nice speaking with you. Good luck with these jobs. The drive, then. Thousands of new jobs, billions of pounds of investment, and a stern defence of globe-trotting Sir Keir Starmer, from Liz Kendall, Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology. Coming up, as the music starts, coming up after news, we will go back to the flyaway PM.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
It's fantastic to be here with you in Berlin.
This iconic setting, the Amazon rainforest.
We agreed a plan here in Samoa to boost investment across the Commonwealth.
Fly with me, let's fly away.
In other news, thousands of military families forced to endure unfit and sometimes dangerous conditions during a time of celebration for the UK's armed forces. We'll have more on that. We will, of course, return to that COVID inquiry. £208 million bare minimum. But is it effectively the political obituary for Boris Johnson? Those stories and more follow the 8 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase will take effect at the start of January. It means a household using a typical amount of energy will pay £1,758 a year, £3 more than now. LBC's reporter Guy Stewart has been reading Ofgem's latest statement.
The regulator says wholesale prices are stable and have fallen by 4% in recent months, and that this increase, which is unexpected, is because of government policy and operating costs, including funding the Sizewell C nuclear power plant. It's why the typical household on a dual fuel tariff will be paying 0.2% more from January to March. Ministers have promised to tackle the affordability crisis, transitioning away from fossil fuels.
Cabinet Minister Liz Kendall has just spoke to Nick. She says support is and will be available for those who are struggling.
We are doubling the number of households who will have access to the Warm Homes Discount Scheme, £150 off your bill this winter for any family or household who's on universal credit, often very hard-working people. Short-term action to help bring the cost of bills down. But in the long run, Nick, the only way we're going to get off this sort of volatile roller coaster of fossil fuels is to build our own clean energy here in this country.
In other news this morning, Sir Keir Starmer says the UK needs to learn the lessons of coronavirus following the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. It concluded there would have been fewer deaths in England had the lockdown in 2020 been introduced earlier. It also criticised the inaction of the UK's four governments. The White House says President Trump supports a new plan to negotiate an end to the war in Ukraine. Details haven't been published, but it's reportedly heavily based on demands by Moscow. It's been revealed that thousands of call-outs were made by military families living in mouldy housing in the run-up to Remembrance Sunday. Data seen by LBC in the 4 weeks to November the 9th show more than 7,000 call-outs made for emergency repairs. Ministers say £3.4 million is going to be spent on improving military housing. And a major prostate cancer screening trial has started, aiming to find the best way to detect the disease. Invites will initially be sent out to 16,000 men across the UK. The trial will use current testing methods, along with a new blood test and improved MRI technology. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 reopened at 95.27. It closed up 20 yesterday. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest with a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Every investor has a future in mind, whether it's seeing your kids through uni or picturing yourself retiring in Tuscany. The hard part can be knowing how to get there. JP Morgan Personal Investing can help you see the path ahead. With our intuitive app, expert support, and 150 years of JP Morgan's investing experience, you can start making more informed investment decisions today. Search JP Morgan Personal Investing. Invest with clarity. Capital at risk.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after 8, Friday, November the 21st. The Prime Minister is in South Africa, his 42nd foreign trip in less than 17 months, and he's got nearly 200,000 air miles. Is that appropriate? Is he rebuilding relationships after the disasters of COVID, the disasters of the Conservative administration, and indeed the prosecution of Brexit? Or should he be here actually getting on with the day job? I'll ask you about that. Plus, the biggest ever attempt at a landmark trial concerning prostate cancer. Professor Hashim Ahmed from Imperial College told me back in March.
What I say to people is support the trial. And this trial is huge, supported by Prostate Cancer UK and the UK government to the tune of £42 million.
In other news,
thousands of military families were living in houses unfit for habitation in the weeks leading up to Remembrance Day. I'm LBC's Joseph Draper, live with the story.
Back to that COVID inquiry. One single damning word, inexcusable. That's the verdict on Boris Johnson's stewardship of the country. So is it the political obituary for the former mayor, Bojo? Here he is speaking with me back in 2013. I asked him the price of a tube fare.
It is £6.70.
Single?
Can that be right? This is unbelievably expensive to me. Who's in? That's outrageous. Folks, who's drawn up this useless chart?
Are you fully on top of this, Mr. Mayor?
Oh, zone one. Here we go. £4.50.
Oh, how we'll miss him. Plus, it's down to Australia. Man, Ian Payne is in Australia. No, he's not in the jungle. He's watching the cricket where, if you're just waking up, England were all out for 172. But don't give up. Australia currently 33 for 4. As one of my colleagues said, we're going to speak to Ian in the last hour of the show. If we bowl them all out, that would be a piece of radio that will be unmissable.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
I think young Ian might have been on the 4X already. If we get a couple more wickets, don't miss that. It'll come towards the end of the show. Ian Bain's live report from the Ashes down in Australia. There are two schools of thought as regards to Keir Starmer, and I'm absolutely taking both on board, and I get it. Towards the end, the Conservative stewardship of this country was shambolic. We've talked a lot about the COVID inquiry, and we shall return to that. And also, the Conservatives' handling of Brexit really couldn't have been more offensive if they tried. So, is the argument that to put Britain back on the world stage, whatever that means, you do need a Prime Minister who's chalking up probably more air miles than a transatlantic jet? Or, with the challenge just about everywhere you face, from economy to education to the National Health Service to defence to Russia, spying to China, everything else, would it help that he was actually at 10 Downing Street? Well, from Brazil to Samoa and Berlin, the Judith Chalmers, for those of you of a certain age, of politics. The Prime Minister seems to be abroad more than he is here. LBC's Alan Zazinski has been counting up Sir Keir's foreign trips.
Come fly with me, let's fly away.
Jetting off to represent the country on the world stage has always been part of the job at Number 10.
I am incredibly proud to be here today in Canberra.
And Minister Thatcher, we're grateful for your visit.
Thank you, Prime Minister Modi, for welcoming me to Delhi today.
But for one leader, it has become a regular occurrence.
This is, of course, my first week as Prime Minister, but I've come here to Washington
3,500 miles from home.
It's fantastic to be here with you in Berlin. Not, alas, my first visit here as Prime Minister.
We agreed a plan here in Samoa to boost investment across the Commonwealth.
Prime Minister Mark Carney and the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, Keir Starmer, enjoyed a beer at an Ottawa pub Saturday.
It's a great honour to have Prime Minister Starmer in the Oval Office.
This iconic setting, the Amazon rainforest.
Sir Keir has been abroad for a sixth of his entire time in office. That's more than a day out of the country every single week. He has visited 44 nations, including the US, five times. He has completed six laps of the planet in doing so, and he has travelled more often and further than any of his predecessors over the same period. Almost double that of Rishi Sunak and Sir Tony Blair. The most recent of all of these trips was to the COP30 climate summit in Brazil, which the Shadow Justice Secretary Robert Jenrick told Nick was a bad idea.
I think it's a massive boondoggle where people fly on private jets to stay in luxury hotels to debate climate change. It's not that climate change doesn't matter, but I'm sure there are better ways in which we could resolve this than this enormous talking shop that costs taxpayers millions of pounds.
The victims minister, Alex Davis-Jones, though, defended the Prime Minister's globetrotting.
Why does he have to be there with the issues confronting the United Kingdom?
Because he is focused on delivering for the United Kingdom, whether that's growth in our economy, more jobs, energy security, all of these things, leading on the environment, which is a priority to so many of your listeners, I know, and many of my constituents.
There are reports, though, that anger is rising over this on the Labour benches. And what probably is not going to do an awful lot to quell that are a rumoured six other planned overseas visits before Christmas, including this 11,000-mile round trip to South Africa.
Pack up, let's fly away.
Returning his seat to the upright position and reporting for LBC, Alan Zazinski. Six more trips, including this one, so five more trips. By the way, the Judith Chalmers reference, Jimmy's got it. The Judith Chalmers show, which was Wish You Were Here, should be Wish You Were Keir. Well, without a man of travelling, who wouldn't? Emily Sheffield is a broadcaster, columnist, former editor of the Evening Standard, joins me now. There are two schools of thought, Emily. He needs to rebuild our reputation, or he needs to be behind his desk. Which do you follow? Morning, Emily.
Good morning. All PMs have to go to the G20. So Cameron, May, Johnson, Sunak, they all went. But he has gone, as your report just said, your brilliant report just said, he has travelled more than almost double Tony Blair and Rishi Sunak. And we have to argue, for instance, did he really need to go to the India delegation 2 weeks ago? Did he need to go to COP30? I would argue absolutely not. And apparently his own team begged him not to.
Oh, that's interesting.
But the only reason we are really talking about this is because he is doing so badly at home. If he was doing well, if this country felt confident in his abilities and his team's abilities right now, we wouldn't be having this conversation. So it's the situation at home has become so dire, and he's jetting off again when his Labour MPs are again openly talking of removing him. And let's be clear, he is now the least popular in the polls PM since polling began. His Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, is the least popular Chancellor since polling began, and one expects that to sink even further after this budget, which is already being openly described by everybody as a total fiasco.
Emily, remembering that expression about cats, mice and playing, and the point that you made, is this show a level of his political tone deafness that he's out of the country yet again with all the scheming and Machiavellian manipulation?
I do think so, and I think I don't think anyone thinks that Keir is a bad man. I think people realise that he does sort of want the best for his country, but he doesn't seem to have any plan. There has been zero narrative since he came to power about what he was doing and the reasons behind the actions that him and his team are taking. And I think, you know, last year's budget was a disaster. There is no one who is arguing that was a positive budget. So you would think in the lead up to this budget, and it was argued at the time that he never really was across what was happening in that budget, which is completely mad. It's one of the, it is the biggest happening all year for any parliament. And here we are again. You know, we have this massive U-turn on income tax rise. Now, the only reason that came into being, and Rachel Reed, now that's all been leaked a week ago, is because they're doing it to save his skin. They don't dare put an income tax rise in and break their manifesto because they think that, again, his own MPs will revolt him against him. So what they're now doing is saying they're going to freeze thresholds, and this has been briefed massively. Now, this is a highly aggressive, regressive tax that hits the poorest and the lowest of the middle class and keeps hurting everyone.
Emily Sheffield, columnist, broadcaster, former editor of the Evening Standard, thanks for your punchy input. 13 after 8, let's get to your calls. Greg's in Leicester. Greg, rebuilding our tarnished global reputation or just simply getting away from his day job? Which is it?
Good morning, Nick. I think it's not getting away from the day job. I think everyone's got that colleague that loves to say, oh, I'm in X for a meeting, I'm in this for a meeting. I've got one myself, so I'm a solicitor.
How much does this cost me already? Probably about 70 quid just as you pick up the phone.
I'll give you a discount, 5%, it's fine. But I've got a colleague that everything is, I've got to have a conference in council with person, so a barrister in person.
Yep.
And you're sort of going, well, we're based in Leicester. Why are you going down to London for a conference? It's going to be an hour and a half on the train. You'll spend half an hour there.
Yeah.
And then, your day is gone. And everyone is sort of agrees it's because she feels a bit exotic doing it. I think that's what it gives it. There is an element of travel with being Prime Minister, of course.
And to the point that Emily made, and I use the expression, a little bit of tone deafness. He knows people are angry about the state of the country. He must know, whether he likes it or not, there is plotting against him, and he decides to go away again.
Yes, absolutely. I just think it goes down to how out of touch he is. To be honest, I think I saw something the other day that was saying that he's clearly a very intelligent man. He's been at the top of legal circles for many years. I think he's just been surrounded by this ilk that, everything we do is fantastic. We are masters of the universe. And he just can't physically fathom that people are against him.
Greg, enjoy the weekend in Leicester, the pride of the East Midlands. A lot of reaction coming in. By the way, I do want to hear the other side, but Sean in Northampton, if you thought I took you back in time for Judith Chalmers, Sean's point, and you really will have to ask your grandparents, Starmer is like Alan Wicker, without the personality and a suit he got for free. He's freeloading to line his pockets. I don't think he's doing that. And to massage his ego. Blah, you don't get much more condemning. Do give me the other side, unless you're all in the same view, that it wouldn't hurt if he did actually return his seat to the upright position in 10 Downing Street. Talking of one Prime Minister under pressure, is one who's gone.
With fantastic broadband. Forgive me.
For the commentators, they're writing the political obituary for one Alexander Boris to Fairfield Johnson. Are they right? That's later in the show. 8:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem's announced its latest price cap. Sir Keir Starmer says the UK needs to learn the lessons of coronavirus following the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. And a major prostate cancer screening trial started in the UK, aiming to find the best way to detect the disease. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. The queue's on the M4 westbound. There's one lane closed, the junction 4 for Heathrow, because of an accident. It's also slow on the M4 westbound because of emergency repairs after a lorry caught fire yesterday between junction 6 for Windsor and junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead, so two lanes are closed. There were long delays on the M25 anti-clockwise after an accident earlier between junction 28 for the A12 and junction 27 for the M11. In Bermondsey, the A2 Old Kent Road is closed in both directions because of an accident between East Street and Humphrey Street, so the queue's. On the Tube, there are minor delays on the Northern line. On the trains, Southern have cancellations between Victoria and Sutton because of problems with the signals. And Southwestern Railway services aren't stopping at Queenstown Road Station.
This is LBC.
A message from TfL.
I saw him in the local news a few days after. His name's Rakesh. They had to put him into a coma just because I didn't look again at that turning. He had two kids. How did I not see his bike ahead of me? Well, I didn't look again. He didn't make it.
Drivers, take another look, not a life. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC. Waitrose presents...
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Enough for me.
Sometimes it whispers.
The safety's best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and Chinese. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
When BP asked me to read the voiceover for their new Wild Bean Cafe ad, I thought I knew what to expect. But when they told me I'd be reading the script next to a mountain waterfall, on horseback, strumming a harp, in a hailstorm, naked, ow, 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 ow. Well, that was wildly unexpected. Just like Wild Bean Cafe having a freshly ground signature espresso blend for everything from Americanos to flat whites in a fuel station. Wowzers. Wild Bean Cafe. Only at BP. Subject to availability at selected BP stores only.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060 973.
Let's come back at 20 minutes after 8. Let's come back to our conversation. Never hear Keir. This is what you're saying on the emails and the texts. This is from, where's your name? Eric. Contrast the success of Keir's representation of UK on the world stage on overseas trips with Rishi Sunak when he absconded from the D-Day celebrations in Normandy to fly back to UK for a TV interview. Eric in Enfield, very good point. And an appalling decision, absolutely appalling decision there. This comes in from Philip in Gerrards Cross. The absent PM, the budget is coming out once more, so he's done a bunk. He's so Teflon. He cannot take responsibility, so passes any bad or tough news to his team. He will, of course, I should say, he will be present for the budget, but the pre-budget build-up. Debbie in Bussage, which I think, as I recall, is a village, I think, in Gloucestershire, but don't quote me. Of course our PM is out of the country. He's been rebuilding relationships with the EU to help businesses in UK trade deals and talks about the Ukraine war, NATO meetings, G7, etc. Meanwhile, Vijay says you are right to question the PM's globe-trotting and, more importantly, that of the Foreign Secretary. OK, do keep them coming. Stuart's in HOS. Stuart, your take on this. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I'd just like to know what the Foreign Secretary and the Business Secretary are doing. Do you remember when Liz Truss was Business Secretary?
Yes.
She did very well. She got a lot of business in for us.
Sorry to talk over you, but they've done that deal with Turkey, or Turkey as they like to call it. They've done that deal with India. I mean, that is a lot of money and a lot of jobs.
I'd like to see when they come online. That would be very interesting. I mean, a lot of the stuff that he's going to get the business is this AI, for instance. Do you know how much energy that takes? The national grid couldn't handle a fraction of it. So all that nonsense with America, that's never going to happen, because the national grid can't even take the wind turbines. If it gets a bit windy, they have to switch them off, which is costing us hundreds of thousands of pounds every time. And all these swanning around the world, what's it actually costing us?
Well, again, I would say, what's it earning us in some... I mean, I think, Stuart, in reality, Emily Sheffield, with whom we were speaking about 10 minutes ago, probably nailed it in that, should he be at G20? Yes, absolutely, he has to be at G20. But did he need to go to COP30? No. No US president was there. Not many other prime ministers or presidents were there. Did he need to go to that Indian delegation? Probably not. Does he need 5 more trips this side of Christmas? Well, I'd argue no, not with all the problems at home. Stuart, thank you. Siddhar's in King's Cross. Siddhar, your view. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello, sir.
Hello. Yes, look, I think he is facing a very tough time, probably the last few months of his premiership. So that's why he keeps running abroad, to try and get some sort of hope that he can pull a rabbit out of a hat. But the reality is that I think internationally, I think he has been... not a heavyweight. I mean, his biggest victory was getting the bully Trump to come over for a state visit or state banquet.
Yeah.
So that's hardly an achievement. And I think the other thing is that because he has been so duplicitous internally, he has lost any semblance of a core vote. Even Boris Johnson, when he was deeply unpopular, could still rely on the Tory core vote to prop him up.
Well, they were pretty quick to get rid of him when they sensed there was blood in the water, though, weren't they?
The MPs were, right? But I think Johnson would never have plumbed the low levels of public approval rating that a Sunak or a Starmer has done.
Siddharth, thank you. More calls on this. John, you'll be the next caller. 8:20, just coming up on 8:24. Now, you may recall the work we did for a military veteran, Jim, last week, who'd served in Afghanistan and supposedly was part of that Op Fortitude. Do you remember the idea? Ring this number if you're homeless veteran, or you have a homeless veteran in your family or that you know, and they'll be given a bed that night. Of course, it didn't work initially. We must, though, thank the MOD. Jim and his dog and his partner have all now been found homes. But in a related story, LBC has learned thousands of military families are forced to endure unfit and sometimes dangerous conditions. This during a time of commemoration, of course, for our armed forces. New data shows that in the 4 weeks prior to Remembrance Sunday, earlier this month, over 7,000 urgent call-outs for emergency housing repairs were made for serving members of our armed forces. So much for that supposed military covenant. Here with all the details, LBC's Joseph Draper. Joseph, morning.
Morning, Nick. Well, yes, we've already heard, haven't we, on your show about the treatment of our veterans, including, as you say, Jim, who fought in Afghanistan. He was then homeless, living in a caravan in Wales, and he said he was left on the helpline for homeless veterans for 26 minutes before being told by an automated voice they were experiencing a high volume of calls.
The Operation Fortitude team are currently on another call and will be with you as soon as they can. Please leave your name and contact number, and we will call you back as soon as we can.
So there's no point in filling the form then?
Well, no, not if it's for you and your partner, no.
Right.
And we've learned now it's not just veterans, but active service people and their families forced to live in substandard homes with mould, cracks, leaky roofs, even rats. We've been shown that data showing over 7,300 urgent call-outs for emergency housing repairs in the month leading up to Remembrance Sunday, what should be a time of respect and thanksgivings for our military personnel. And that is a huge increase of a third compared to January this year. And we've also learned it took 2 days on average for government contracted suppliers to respond. Now, one of those call-outs was to Mike, not his real name. He served in the armed forces for 22 years.
The mould comes back every year. It just never gets resolved. I've got big, massive cracks along my house here, same as my colleagues next door. His roof caved in, for goodness sake. I've been serving over 2 decades in the army. I love the army. I know nothing else. Yes, I'm honoured to be part of this system, right? But we just need little things back in return. Little bits of gratitude, you know. You don't need to give us, you know, thousands of pounds. What we need is looking after where we sleep, look after how we eat, and look after our healthcare system. That's all we need.
And the response time for Mike was often so bad, he says he had to pay out of his own pocket for his own repairs. And it's not just him. He's told us of a friend who had rats in their walls, and when they reported it, they were told it was just noisy pipes. And the Liberal Democrats are calling for the government to accelerate plans to upgrade Britain's military homes. They raised an urgent parliamentary question about this to the Armed Forces Minister. Here's their defence spokesperson, James McCleary.
You know, it's a stressful, difficult and demanding job. And ultimately, we are potentially asking these people to put their lives on the line for us. The least we could do is give their families a warm home and a roof over their head. So I think these things are connected together. The point is you can have, you know, all the shiniest military tech in the world that you like. But if you can't retain people with the skills to operate it and the morale to actually go and fight because they don't feel that they're being properly looked after, even to a basic standard, then you will not have an effective fighting force.
And Nick, the Ministry of Defence told us they were leading a generational renewal of armed forces accommodation with £9 billion over the next decade. That will see 40,000 houses modernised, refurbished, rebuilt. And they say the number of issues across the estate have actually decreased in recent years, saying they're determined to drive those numbers down further.
LBC's Joseph Draper reporting. 8:28 is the time. Let's come back to Keir Starmer's travels. George in Mayfair says Starmer won't get re-elected because of what he does abroad. Chris, I'll short this a little bit. I'm fed up with this government. It feels like Starmer is barely present. No one is questioning the impact all this travel has on their carbon footprint. They must be pulling their hair out. John's in Coventry. John, your reaction. Should he be rebuilding our image, a reputation? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, I mean, if you're the captain of a company that's going pear-shaped, you're going to rob as many air miles, or sorry, utilise as many air miles as possible, aren't you? You're going to be dereliction of duty, I think they call it. But, I mean, if we were doing amazing things like we were in 2008, great, get on as many planes as you want, enjoy the sort of plaudits and the roses and all that, you know, but he's not. It's the country's on fire. Things are going out of kilter. He's doing knee-jerk reactions. I mean, his business with the immigration thing, should have done that as soon as he came in, but we were talking about being nice to the, you know, the sort of narrative and all that, and now it's got out of control.
Question for you, John. Does it show a lack of political nous? He's not particularly politically savvy, because while I do think he has to be actually at this one, others have just, he's been away and the mice have been allowed to play, whatever that expression is.
The trouble is, with Keir Starmer, it's a case of him, he thinks it's political monarchy. He thinks he's untouchable. He thinks it's a case of he's got a massive majority, he's very clever, he doesn't have to, but like I said before, he came in on a protest vote, so he needs to get his act into gear and get a control of the situation. It's quite easy to turn it all around, and it's quite easy to get the public's favour, but every single decision they seem to be making seems to be running them the other way, and that's why I think he thinks he's only here to just change the narrative, and then they'll get somebody else in. And
all right, never hear Keir. He needs to be getting into gear, Keir, says John. Thank you for that. Coming up after the news, you paid your TV licence? If you haven't, you're not alone. I must warn you, of course, you're committing an offence, criminal offence, but MPs tell the BBC, how come you haven't collected £1 billion worth? £1 billion of supposed TV tax, or they like to call it the TV licence. In other news, the biggest trial of its kind into prostate cancer. Dr. Matthew Hobbs is Director of Research at Prostate Cancer UK.
This really is a trial that is significantly more ambitious than anything that's gone before. It's the biggest screening trial in 20 years. No screening trial has ever done what we're doing here, where we're comparing different types of screening to one another to make sure we get the very best for men.
Plus, in the next hour, to our man in Australia. Ian Payne is in Australia for the first day, or the Ashes. This is the first day of the Ashes. I'm sure we'll watch the second day if there is one. England all out for 172. We have checked. Australian out 50 for 4. A live report from Ian Payne after a full day of hospitality at the cricket ground in Perth. Don't miss that in the next hour. Just turned 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC News Time. Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase, roughly another 28 pence a month, will take effect at the start of January. Sir Keir Starmer says the government is carefully considering the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. It concluded there would have been fewer deaths in England had the lockdown in 2020 been introduced earlier. And a major prostate cancer screening trial has started in the UK, aiming to find the best way to detect the disease. It'll use current testing methods along with a new blood test and improved MRI technology. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
Tom Swarbrick on LBC.
I have to say, it must be incredibly dispiriting if you are listening to this and you are on 25, 30, 35 grand a year, whatever, and you are hearing that people who earn significantly more than you feel poor. I mean, that is not something that makes you feel like you're going to get out of bed tomorrow with the same figure that you did this morning, because you want to get to earn those sums of money.
Tom Swarbrick, Monday to Friday from 4 p.m. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app.
the £5 meal deal from McDonald's. Get a cheeseburger or mayo chicken, medium fries, four McNuggets and a medium soft drink for guess what? That's right, £5. It's not called the £5 meal deal for nothing. From 11am, not available on delivery. Carbonated soft drink upgrade fees apply. Participating restaurants subject to availability.
Now, let me ask y'all a question. Are you ready to ditch the crowds and the cookie-cutter holidays? I'm talking quiet mornings spent by crystal-clear lakes, cruising across the vast landscapes of Canada and the U.S. at a leisurely pace, stopping at charming towns and saying howdy. Go deeper with littleamerica.co.uk.
Have you found peace?
No. I don't think that I will ever completely be at peace.
I don't want to live with this trauma anymore.
For many veterans, their battles continue after service. Help for Heroes stands with them every day, providing life-changing support that rebuilds lives. It's not just their fight, it's ours too. Together, we must help veterans find the peace they deserve. Search Help for Heroes today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:34. Now, you could see the pressures on the BBC if you were watching us from another planet over some of their programming decisions and executive decision making. But there's pressure of a different sort now coming from some MPs, and you'll hear from a leading MP in just a moment. This is over the TV tax or TV licence. Have you paid your TV licence? Remember, if you don't, you risk potential imprisonment. But the MPs have totted up just how much money the BBC is failing to get. It's reported to be about £1 billion in 1 year alone. Sir Geoffrey Clifton-Brown is Conservative MP for North Cotswolds and chairs the Public Accounts Committee and joins me now. How do we get to that figure, Sir Geoffrey? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Well, thank you very much for having me on your show. As you say, it is a great deal of money. And basically, 3.6 million households declared that they did not need a licence, 617 million. And then there were another lot that actually evaded the licence. So the total came to over 1.1 billion. And the BBC really have to take firm action to deal with this. We know that the number of prosecutions, for example, were down 17%. They did, to their credit, double the number of visits to 2 million. But they really, I think, need to get the message across, as you said, that if you watch any program on any device, at streaming or otherwise, you need a BBC license. And if they start losing this sort of revenue, they are in deep trouble in the longer run. Do you know what it's really all about, Nick?
Go on, Sir Geoffrey. Sorry, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's all about trust. And the BBC, with all the other things that you've just said that are going on at the moment, they need to work very, very hard to restore that trust, because we do say in our report that 51%, only 51% of youngsters think the BBC represents them. Now, if that trend continues, they are in deep trouble in the longer run.
Let's back up a little, Sir Geoffrey. Do you think that the collection process is fit for the modern day?
No, we do say there are several things they can do. They can modernise it. Now, for example, if you or I are renewing our utility bills, 80% of us do that online. The BBC still have 40% paper. Now, this really, in the modern digital world, is not the best way to conduct a licensing system. They know through modern methods who is watching what programmes, and they could therefore target those people who don't pay the licensing fee, and they could publish on a fairly regular basis. If we know the figures, they know the figures. They should be publishing that on a regular basis, and making it very clear that if somebody's not paying, it's actually having an effect on those people that are paying. It's not fair if they're watching, if they're using any sort of streaming service and they're not paying the licensing fee, they are, as you say, breaking the law.
A new DG, Director General, will be found, I imagine, in fairly short order. What does he or she need to do as regards this area, Sir Geoffrey?
Well, the new DG has got a hell of a big job on their plate, haven't they? They're two things, really. They're the chief executive which covers this area, how do you balance the finances of the BBC? They're also the editor-in-chief, dealing with all the other areas of bias and compilation of programmes and so on. So this is a really, really big job, and I think they will. It'll be interesting to see who they come up with.
Finally, and let's remind everybody, you risk imprisonment, you are committing a criminal offence, but given some of the coverage of events in the Middle East, given what is perceived as an anti-Semitic slant, given the fact that they put a man to air 522 times who called Jewish people devils, given this morning The Sun, one of the biggest selling newspapers, tells us that there's been another rape arrest in Strictly Come Dancing. Again, it's a criminal act, but you can understand why some people don't have much faith in the Beeb, Sir Geoffrey.
I do absolutely understand that. And in this modern world where everything is exposed very quickly, they've got to work doubly as hard to overcome all these various problems. And I think, I'm sure that you and I would agree that probably this whole reaction to the Trump thing, they were pretty flat-footed. And I do think on a number of other occasions, if they quickly started to apologise, say, we've got it wrong, we're going to learn the lessons, we're not going to do it in future, I think people would react to that positively. So I think they've got lessons to learn how they deal with these crises in future.
I bet it's chilly in the North Cotswolds this morning, isn't it, Sir Geoffrey?
It is, but not as chilly as in the north of Scotland.
Sir Geoffrey Clifton-Bown, Conservative MP for North Cotswolds. You chair the Public Accounts Committee. Thank you. Diane, I'm going to come to you to talk about the BBC. But, of course, whenever I talk about the licence fee, this is a facet that one of my colleagues has enjoyed for about, what, the last 10 years I've been doing this. So let's go to the schedules. This is what you're paying £174 for. Here we go. What time of the day is it? Oh, right, here we go. Rip-offs from 10:45. Rip-off Britain, holidays, repeat. Homes under the hammer, properties in South Lancashire, repeat. Bargain hunt, oh my God. Then the news, they do that live. Escape to the country, a couple from Surrey seek a move to Butte. Oh, sorry, I snorted. That's a repeat. Garden rescue, a Eurovision-themed garden in Doncaster. Oh, don't worry, it's a repeat. Antiques road trip, we're off to Cornwall. And then Pointless, which, oh my, Pointless is a retreat. Do they repeat Pointless? Pointless is a repeat. Dear God. And then you're into the 6 o'clock news. BBC Two, where should we start? Here we go. Political Thinking with Nick Robinson and Shabana Mahmood. I think I'll be politically missing that one. Impossible, repeat. Unbeatable, repeat. Great British Menu. Recipes from Northern Ireland, repeat. Liz Bonin's Wild Caribbean. Who's Liz? I don't know. Liz Explores the Central American Coastline, repeat. Flog It from Somerset, repeat. Richard Osman's House of Games. And we're meant to pay for that. Diana's in Beverly. Diana, what do you want to say to this story? Good morning.
I love it when you get onto this, especially the repeat ones. Right. One, it's antiquated. I don't watch the BBC. I don't listen to the BBC. I think it's a load of rubbish. Since when has the government... Do you know years ago, Nick, you used to get told, you need a TV licence to watch the BBC?
Yes.
Well, so you don't need... So why have they now changed it to if you have a TV? Since when has the government been in charge of people having a TV? I've got a driving licence, but I ain't got a car.
Right.
Also... I've lost my train of thought there when you laughing. But it's just that it should be pay to view. It should be pay to view because then, and I'm not gonna, even if I have to next year, I'm not going to buy a TV license, I'm telling you now.
Well, no, I have to say, I mean, A, because yeah, I like you and we talk many times, you could go to jail, my love.
Listen, what's the chance of that happening?
I'll tell you what,
there would be outcry if there was, because even...
But that's like saying I'm going to do 90 miles an hour if you did have a car down the M1. What's the chance of being caught? I mean, it's a strange way to live your life.
There's less offenders that go... There's more offend... Oh, I can't get the words out. There's people that do worse and don't go to jail than someone having a TV... than not having a TV licence. But the other thing is... The amount of money that Hugh Edwards he got paid when they even knew what he'd done.
£200,000 he's failed to return.
Even if I have to pay more to have say like Sky or something, I will pay more for the principle of not having a TV license. It is so out of date.
Diana, look after yourself. Thank you. More calls coming on this. Katie, you're going to talk about Never Hear Keir, but Ivan the Generation. Where they had something called TV detector vans, don't laugh, and they were a van, and it would have some kind of aerial that would sort of rotate. I've never known, was that complete for? Because what would happen is they park at the local railway station. I admit it myself, they park at the railway station. This was years ago, I wasn't even on the radio, I was doing a different job. And I remember walking, and a detector van, and coming in and talking to my then wife, have we got a TV licence? And she said, oh, do you know, I have absolutely no idea. Oh, my God, the detector vans are in the area. Ah! But was it all a canard, i.e. a ruse, a joke? If you worked in one of those, were you a man or woman who just drove the van, parked to the railway station, and then just sit in the back and having a cup of coffee and reading the Daily Mirror or the Sun or whichever paper shows you, knowing that people would get off the trains, run home and say to their husbands and wives, ah, we need to... Or was there a bit of kit in there that actually... You say, so you get, right, we need to check 27 Station Approach, or whatever it is, 15 Acacia Avenue. And then they go by, and they had a sort of, it was almost like the Second World War. You know those movies where the Nazis would have, like, a couple of coat hangers going around the top of a van, and they'd pick out if you were trying to get a message from the Norwegian resistance over to London. Beep, 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 beep. Was it like, what is the reality? If you worked in the field of TV, if you can say to me, it was all a I drove those vans for 10 years, it's an utter joke. Do let me know. But we're talking about Never Hear Keir with Katie in Bushy. Does it matter, Katie? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you.
Yes, I just wanted to say, yeah, I mean, he's certainly racking up the air miles by the sound of it. And obviously, it's like he's running away from the issue.
Yeah.
But I just want to thank Keir so much before we have a go at him and bash him. Let's just thank him for that lovely comedy moment that we had in Egypt when President Trump signed the peace agreement, when he called up Keir Starmer to the podium and he left him hanging like a jilted bride. I think I just want to say thank you for that moment, Keir, because that was just comedy gold. That's my year. I didn't have that on my bingo card for this year.
It's made Katie's 2025. I do remember that. And the Trump just pushing him to one side. Katie, thank you. We'll have more on that. Now we're starting. Thanks, Katie. We're starting to get to the bottom of this. Ryan, the vans were fake. They used to get serviced at Royal Mail vehicle repair places. They were all empty inside. I used to work at Royal Mail. One of the mechanics told me, well, we're getting close, but you weren't actually, and I'm grateful, Ryan, but you weren't actually the mechanic. So did you service these vehicles? Or can you? Or did you actually drive one? Or do you work in TV license collection or whatever it might be? We need to hear from you. We'll have more calls on that. Also, well, the obituary writers have been busy, political obituary writers, I stress, for this man.
I've also eaten vegan sausage rolls. Have you eaten a vegan
sausage? I've not, but it's meant to be a monster hit for that bakery chain, isn't it?
They're not bad.
Absolutely.
They're not bad.
A vegan sausage roll, probably warmed up in his microwave, I would imagine. Boris Johnson's political obituary, it's in the next hour. 8:45, LBC News headlines now. Dominic Ellis.
Ofgem has announced an unexpected rise in the energy price cap from January. Sir Keir Starmer says the government is carefully considering the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. And new figures show public sector borrowing stood at £17.4 billion last month. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M4 westbound. There's one lane closed for emergency repairs between Junction 7 for Slough West and Junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead. That's after a lorry caught fire yesterday. Also on the M4, going out of town, one lane stays closed at Junction 4 for Heathrow after an accident earlier. There are long delays in Bermondsey. The A2 Old Kent Road is closed in both directions between the Bricklayers Arms and Humphrey Street. That's because of a serious accident. They're accusing Crystal Palace. Annerley Hill is partly blocked both ways. A car has caught fire between Church Road and Hamlet Road. On the trains, Southern have delays of up to 15 minutes and some cancellations between Victoria and Sutton. That's because of problems with the signals. And Southwestern Railway services aren't stopping at Queenstown Road, also because of problems with the signals.
This is LBC.
Boots' biggest ever Black Friday is here, with huge savings on thousands of your favourite beauty must-haves, including better-than-half-priced star gifts on Number 7, Lancome, MAC and many more. Don't miss out. Shop now. And don't forget all those points you can earn with your Boots Advantage card. Selected stores and products while stocks last. Add card, T and C supply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
You know how fans shout at football matches?
Oh, wake up!
That's because sound is the most effective way to tell the players they're rubbish. Works in advertising too. Because when you amplify your advertising using radio, your campaign is 49% more likely to get noticed. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
Welcome on board this LNER service from London King's Cross to Edinburgh. My name's Paul, your train manager today, and hang on. Is that a Scrabble tournament in Cochair? Yes, G with an X is a word. Right, we're cruising at 125 miles per hour. Same speed this lad next to me is typing. Someone's on a roll. The cafe bar's in Coach G if you fancy a brew. Or if you're mid-box set binge, just order through the QR code at your seat. We'll deliver it. So sit back and enjoy your journey. With LNER, it's freedom all the way.
So, what's on your to-do list today? Why don't you check if you're eligible for pension credit? It tops up your pension income and also opens up help with heating bills, council tax, and more. Search pension credit on gov.uk or call 0800 99 1234. There's nothing to lose. Check today. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
This year, Amazon are increasing the electric delivery vehicles we use across Europe to 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden. Can they have their ball back, please? We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Time is 11 minutes before 9. Louis, going to talk with you about Sir Keir. Never hear Keir. Just a clarification from what we said from Sir Geoffrey Clifton-Brown. He talked about needing a TV licence for streaming services. Just to clarify, that is, of course, BBC streaming service. And a lot of you are saying, and a lot of you are asking, if you watch Netflix, Paramount, or any of those others, of course, it is not applicable. So perhaps I should have picked him up. I understood what Sir Geoffrey was saying. But anyway, just to make that plain, we are aware of that. So hopefully that's done away with any confusion. Benjamin said, I haven't paid and I won't anytime soon. I've no money to sponsor state-backed propaganda. Don says, TV detector vans, they had the white and green lined computer printer paper lists, the ones with the punch holes on either side. I remember that. Many of my younger listeners will, again, they'll have to ask their parents. It was a database of households without a licence. Park outside, knock on the door. You've been detected, but in reality by a spreadsheet of non-paying addresses. And one on the report we gave you about the state of military housing, just before I come to you, Louis, this is where your name, Barry, in Bucknell. My brother-in-law was stationed in Germany in the 80s and fought in the Gulf War. At the end of the Cold War, he was stationed back in the UK. His family were moved into ex-American accommodation on Greenham Common. He couldn't believe the difference between the standard of housing. He explained the housing was clean, damp-free and very well maintained. The first time in 16 years of service he'd experienced decent housing. I remind you, of course, this gentleman had been moved into American housing. I'll carry on with Barry's point. I can only imagine in the last 30 years, with lack of funding, the housing has simply got worse. Let's talk about Sir Keir Starmer. Well, he's not here. We can, can't we? Louis in Guildford. Louis, your view. Good morning.
Good morning once more. It's good to be here today. But I am sick and tired, really sick and tired of us slagging our Prime Minister. This is our Prime Minister and the world is listening to us. Doing this to our Prime Minister. And we get a decent man who has, you know, put himself out there to lead the country, and all we do is really slack him. Do we know how much income?
It is his choice.
It is his choice.
He's fought tooth and nail to get the job.
True.
We've not twisted his arm. We pay. He is in charge of levying billions of pounds worth of our money to pay his colleagues and to pay all the civil servants in Whitehall. That has a degree of responsibility, Louis. And I'm proud to say, in a country such as the United Kingdom, he can be held up for public scrutiny.
Very true. And I am up for public scrutiny, but he is there to do the job. But all these travels he is undertaking,
Louis,
they are bringing money to the country. We're saying we're not having income, we're not having jobs, people are poor. And don't we see that these travels bring income to the country?
Louis, then why, sir, is he the most unpopular Prime Minister since polling began? More unpopular than Thatcher, Blair, Brown, Boris, the whole damn lot. How?
It is our mindset. And I dare to say I love LBC. And I love you guys. I've been listening for years. But I'm also getting slightly depressed that we are turning into this whole depressive community where everybody sees everything wrong with everything. When the election was done, we were so happy that there was a fresh air, the fresh government, a change of all these things that had happened. I would say the majority of the people were...
Conservative MPs who lost their jobs were happy. Anyway, do go on, sir.
And I hoped that, you know, we could give this government a chance to redress the things that have gone wrong. And talking about MPs, I would say to Labour MPs who are elected by our people to go and do a job, if they don't want to support the Prime Minister, they should jump the ship and go somewhere else.
No, that's not right. Come on. Born and bred, possibly served for this country. You shouldn't have to go elsewhere if you don't like the Prime Minister, Louis.
I just think that by us doing what we're doing, we're shooting ourselves on the foot.
All right. Louis, I have enjoyed our conversation, and I'm grateful. We're going to disagree agreeably and see what others make of it. Thank you. And, Louis, here is some good news, although it is in a very troubled area. And, Louis, this, you say we always concentrate, this is the first eligible men have been invited to join a trial testing the most promising screening techniques for prostate cancer. Hailed as a £42 million game-changer, the Transform Project, experts hope, could help save thousands of lives. Enough from me. Let's go to one of those experts. And for the purpose of clarity, I will say that I am proud to serve as an ambassador for Prostate Cancer UK. Let's get that out there. Hashim Ahmed is a professor, chief investigator of the Transform trial, chair of urology at the Imperial College Healthcare NHS Trust, also professor of urology at Imperial College London, someone that I met in his professional capacity earlier this year. Good to see you again, Professor. Let's start at the very beginning, as they say, sir. Remind people, why is Transform hopefully going to be so transformative? Morning to you.
Morning, Nick. Hope you're well.
Yes,
good to see you again. So Transform is going to be one of the biggest academic trials in prostate cancer screening ever. So I'm really proud to work with Prostate Cancer UK like you and the National Institute of Health Research funded by the government. It's going to be a £42 million endeavour. We've seen over the last few months, the debate has been raging. Part of society has been pushing for screening for prostate cancer. Others have been warning that it's not quite as simple as that. And we need evidence, we need data, and Transform will fill that evidence gap because we're not sure whether it's the right thing to start a population health intervention like prostate cancer screening. The reason for that is we know screening for prostate cancer saves lives, but it can come at a cost of the diagnostic tests can be harmful and the treatments themselves can sometimes be worse than the disease. So we need to, in Transform, look at new ways of screening for prostate cancer that might involve a PSA test at various levels. It might involve a spit test, which looks at genetic risk, and importantly, a 10-minute MRI scan, what I call a prostagram, to see if we can address those harms, reduce them as low as possible. We can't eliminate them, but reduce them as low as possible and retain the benefit of screening for prostate cancer, saving lives. I think this trial could show that we could save even more lives because currently we know that the PSA test can actually miss important cancers as well, which we often don't talk about.
If we come to what you and your expert colleagues here, what will you be looking for in the first returns from Transform?
So the first stage is 2 years. We're going to invite up to 16,000 men to take part. And I would encourage anybody who gets that letter from their GP over the next few months and couple of years to join the study. Please do consider it. It's really important. It'll make a big difference to how we look after men in the future and possibly yourself.
Agreed.
We want to compare different ways of screening for prostate cancer using PSA MRI scan. We're going to compare it to what we call a control or standard care. So men who are milling about through the normal life who are not getting tested, we need to compare new tests to what's happening at the moment. And that will allow us to pick the best approach. So that first stage is, what's the best approach? What's the optimal approach? What's the most cost-effective approach to take forward? And then stage two is going to be the really hard work. Up to 300,000 men will be invited. Wow. And we're going to look at the best approach for prostate cancer screening. We're going to embed that with the best approaches for treatment. So not just surgery and radiotherapy, which we know can carry lots of side effects, but something called focal therapy, where we treat just the area of cancer. So we're going to do everything possible to try and keep the benefit, reduce the harms, and really move this question on so that we can deliver a screening program that benefits men in the future.
Lastly, Professor, 5 years hence, a decade hence, what does success look like in this field? As regards detection, obviously, as regards detection of prostate cancer.
Yeah, so I think it's important, just like you did, you make an informed choice. Men make an informed choice. They look at the topic and they decide in themselves, do I want to get tested? Up until we get a screening program, that's the only way we can do this, where men make that choice themselves. They need to empower themselves, and I would not discourage them from doing that. I think that's the important thing. And as we get more awareness, that will continue to grow. In the next 2 or 3 years, we will share our data with the government. And if that early data impacts on the National Screening Committee's decision-making in future, we might get an early answer to the screening question, and screening could be delivered in the next 2 or 3 years. We will see what the early data shows, but it's ultimately we will share that data with the National Screening Committee so that we can get quick answers as the data comes through.
Great to chat with you again. Best wishes to your family and to your team. Thanks, Professor. Hashim Ahmed, Chief Investigator of the Transform Trial, Chair of Urology, Imperial College Healthcare, NHS Trust, also Professor of Urology at Imperial College London. I just remind you, if you're aged 50 to 74, look out for that letter if you get it from your GP. Right, the music means we must go on. And the political obituary writers are sharpening their pencils for this man.
Would you like a cup of tea?
Yeah, sure.
Go on, have a cup of tea.
Thank you. Do you regret your comments, sir?
Go on, have a cup of tea.
Thank you very much.
There you go.
Do you regret your comments, sir?
I want you to have a cup of tea.
Boris Johnson offering reporters a cup of tea back in 2018. He was then Foreign Secretary and he'd made ill-advised comments about the burqa. But is it really now? Off you go, Bojo. Plus, into the NHS and the troubling rise in racism, which is driving a record number of overseas-trained doctors to leave the country. Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase will take effect at the start of January. It'll add around 28 pence per month to the average dual fuel bill. Senior Conservative Alex Burghardt has told LBC News he's not surprised by the increase.
The steps that Ed Miliband, the Energy Secretary, is taking are inevitably going to drive up costs for British families. And I'm afraid this isn't the end of it. That, you know, the way he's going about pursuing net zero is very, very expensive. And ultimately, that cost is going to be borne by consumers of energy, by the British people.
Ministers say they're taking immediate and long-term action to bring down energy bills. Sir Keir Starmer says the government is carefully considering the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. An inquiry found yesterday that all four home nations were too slow to contain the virus. Ukraine's President Zelensky says he's ready to work with the United States on their vision for ending the war with Russia. Details haven't yet been officially published, but it's reportedly heavily based on demands by Moscow. Figures show public sector borrowing stood at £17.4 billion last month. That's £1.8 billion less than the same time last year, but still the third highest October figure since records began. LBC has learned thousands of call-outs were made by military families living in mouldy housing in the run-up to Remembrance Sunday. In the 4 weeks to November the 9th, more than 7,000 call-outs were made for emergency repairs. The Liberal Democrats' defence spokesperson, James McCleary, has told LBC... It is a major concern.
You can have, you know, all the shiniest military tech in the world that you like, but if you can't retain people with the skills to operate it and the morale to actually go and fight because they don't feel that they're being properly looked after, even to a basic standard, then you will not have an effective fighting force.
The Ministry of Defence says it's leading a generational renewal of armed forces accommodation, which will be backed by £9 billion over the next decade. And seven yellow weather warnings for ice are in force this morning. Forecasters say temperatures fell to minus 11 in places overnight, but the Met Office says it will turn slightly milder over the weekend. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 57 at 94.70. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for many. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
All right, tank's full. And I use my Nectar points to get money off fuel.
No way, how much?
600 points, 10 pence off per litre at Esso, and I get 100 points back.
Carpooling and fuel savings. Nice one.
Yep. Now, if we could just near leaving on time.
Let's not push it.
Turn your Nectar points into savings at Esso. Spend 600 points, get 10 pence off per litre and 100 points back.
18 plus, Nectar required. Participating Esso excludes NI. Until the 3rd of December, T's and C's at nectar.com/Esso.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning to you. 3 minutes after nine on Friday, November the 21st. Coming up in this hour, as the COVID inquiry releases those devastating findings, people are saying it is the political end for Boris Johnson, the Prime Minister at the time. We'll ask whether you agree. In other news, the troubling rise of racism as it is exhibited towards our doctors who've decided up with this we will not put and are leaving the country in record numbers. Wes Streeting was on the show exactly a week ago.
I think we've got a sort of a 70s, 80s style racism that's re-emerged, and we've got to put it back in its box. And government's got a role to play, but all of us have got a role to play.
Plus, later in this hour, off to LBC's Ian Payne. Not in the jungle, he's at the stadium in Perth watching day one of the Ashes. We'll have a live report at the end of the day following Ian's hospitality later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
The reviews are in of Boris Johnson's stewardship of this country, as of course we hear the latest from the inquiry. For the Daily Mirror, from the Mirror to the Times, the Mirror failed, failed, failed. Boris Johnson's disastrous leadership during Britain's gravest crisis in generations. For the Times, a chaotic administration that through its failure to grasp the gravity of the coronavirus epidemic sweeping the country caused delays resulting in 23,000 unnecessary deaths. The leader piece goes on, no Prime Minister in modern times has faced a charge so specific in its human cost or so damning in its assessment of his flailing leadership. Any suggestion, says the Times, this self-styled jester of the British political scene could return as saviour of the Conservative Party is now laid to rest. As I say, from the Mirror up to the Times, or from the Times up to the Mirror, whichever way you view your newspapers, they are as one condemning of one Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson. So we track his career from MP, Mayor of London, Foreign Secretary, and of course the top job, PM, and a colourful career for Bojo. But is that damning indictment from Baroness Hallett in that COVID report the final nail in the coffin? LBC's Guy Stewart looks back at the highs and considerable lows of Bojo's career.
I'm glad that this independent report has finally nailed the myth that drunken fans were in any way responsible for the deaths of 96 innocent people.
He's been one of the most flamboyant politicians, but from early on as an MP, also no stranger to controversy.
That was a lie that unfortunately, very, very regrettably, got picked up in a leader in The Spectator in 2004, which I was then editing. And I went to Liverpool to apologise.
Becoming Mayor of London in 2008 cemented Boris Johnson's influence in British politics, including highlights, of course, like overseeing the 2012 Olympics.
Ping pong was invented on the dining tables of England. And I say to the world, ping pong is coming home.
But the role was huge and came with challenges.
Angel to London Bridge, how much is that going to cost you?
I'll,
I've got the figures here. I've got the.
Okay,
If you get a,
I don't know what you're finding difficult about this. You're quite a well-educated man.
Someone give me. Here we go. Here's a whole list. Here we go. Okay.
It wasn't just details that got Boris Johnson stuck. Remember the zipline fiasco?
It's going well. It's very, very well organised. What they do? Get me a ladder.
After two terms as mayor, it was time to return to national politics at the 2015 general election. And then his first job in government as foreign secretary. But it was the Brexit referendum that handed Boris Johnson the spotlight he needed.
There should be no confusion between the wonders of Europe and holidays in Europe with a political project. I now think he's in real danger of getting out of proper democratic control.
David Cameron and Remain lost. Boris Johnson won, and he went on to secure the top job, replacing Theresa May as PM.
No one in the last few centuries has succeeded in betting against the pluck and nerve and ambition of this country. They will not succeed today.
That problem with recalling details reared its head again.
Great local schools with fantastic broadband.
But his number one focus was, of course, taking Britain out of the European Union.
We've taken back control of our laws and our destiny. We've taken back control of every jot and tittle of our regulation in a way that is complete and unfettered.
The challenge, bigger than any else he could have imagined, was COVID-19. Taking unprecedented measures and putting the nation into lockdown in March 2020.
Each and every one of us is now obliged to join together to halt the spread of this disease, to protect our NHS and to save many, many thousands of lives.
Mr. Johnson contracted the virus himself days later.
I have today left hospital after a week in which the NHS has saved my life, no question. It's hard to find words to express my debt.
The former PM maintains he did all he could to protect the British people with the information he had. His record now tainted by the likes of parties in Downing Street and questions over COVID contracts. That criticism now formally delivered by the second report of the UK COVID inquiry.
To assess what was reasonable, one must therefore put the decisions into proper context. Nonetheless, I can summarise my findings of the response as too little, too late.
Baroness Hallett concluding Guy Stewart's report. Let's get to your voices and your views, the political obituaries. George in Tottenham. Is it fair, George? Morning.
Hi, Nick. Great show. I don't think it is, Nick, to be honest with you. I mean, we had a COVID that's coming over to this country. No one knew how big it was. The world didn't know how big it was. And Boris and Sunak, they implemented things like the bounce back loans and the furlough schemes to keep the country going. So
we now
respect,
know there's billions of pounds worth of fraud in some of those schemes that will never be recovered, George.
But on the other hand, he saved thousands and thousands of companies from going under. I mean, you've got to try and balance it. But I mean, that's why we've got a £20 billion debt to this country. And if we look at facts, we've got a £20 billion fact from 14 years of Conservatives. We've had the Labour government in for 1 year, and it's now £40 billion.
Okay. I hear you. It is just, I mean, you're right to point that out, and I think there'll be a lot of examination of Labour's economic handling with the budget next week. But I'm just asking you this. Could you ever see a day, and you don't have to tell me whether you're a Conservative supporter or not, could you ever see a day when Boris Johnson would actually return to the helm of the Conservative Party?
I think too much damage has been done. Yeah. I think he tried to do the best he could under extreme circumstances. I wouldn't have liked to have been in his. Thousands of people dying at the time. Yes. It was terrible. But what can you do? No one was prepared for this. The world wasn't prepared for this.
Fair points that you make, George. Also, I have to say, half the lives lost in the first wave would have been saved if lockdown was just one week earlier. And we now know, according to the Baroness Hallett, that it simply wasn't being taken seriously enough. And there was a toxic culture
with jockeying for position going on, which is, by the way, having been in around politicians and politics for more years than is healthy, it's no surprise that they're all jockeying for position. George, thank you. Guy in Cleethorpes. Farewell, Boris Johnson. Is that the reality now? Guy, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. I'd love it to be. I think there's a couple of points I'd make, which obviously there's lots of information flying around, but I was watching very, very good reporting, brave reporting, on Sky when it first broke in Italy, mm-hmm. and it was drastic. And,
I remember that.
And there were meetings in London.
Absolutely overrun. Yeah,
there were meetings in London where Boris was laughing.
Yeah.
And he didn't even go to the COVID meeting. He let Dominic Cummings run the COVID meeting.
Who is also widely condemned, by the way, in the Hallett Inquiry, I need to say.
Yeah. So, I know you can only know what you know, but he really wasn't in the chair at all. Can he come back? Well, a self-centred, manipulative liar that used to run the country coming back. It's happened in the States.
If he doesn't come back, Guy, politically, how will you remember him?
I'll be honest. I'll remember him for Have I Got News For You?
Thanks very much, Guy. Ian's in Waterloo. Farewell, Boris, politically.
Yeah, and hello, Belmarsh. That's what it should be.
And what,
you should
sorry?
Go to jail, Nick. Hello, Belmarsh.
Hello, Belmarsh. Sorry, sir. Go ahead, the jail in Woolwich. Yeah, on you go. Yep.
He should go to jail. If you're sending people from a hospital with COVID back into a care home with people that haven't got COVID, they're going to catch COVID and they're going to die. Doesn't take a rocket scientist. This man lied and deceived throughout his career. He's been sacked every single time from every single job if he hasn't resigned or been forced to resign.
Not as mayor. I just have to say, not as mayor. Go on, Ian.
Not as mayor. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the only one. This guy's an absolute embarrassment to this country. And like I say, I think he should go to jail for what he's done. Now the inquiry's over, let the police take over and investigate.
Ian, thank you for that. Let's pick up on the conversation we had in the previous hour concerning we're attacking a former Prime Minister. The previous Prime Minister, never hear Keir was under attack in the previous hour. That's what you're saying. Ingrid in Wembley, give it a break. You're negative about anything Starmer's doing. Surely it's your responsibility to talk the country up. If he's the worst PM since polling began, you have contributed to this. My goodness me, I don't even get that power. Joseph in Evesham, Starmer is so disliked because he only had a third of the electorate vote from him in the first place. And as usual, his approval ratings have dropped, which happens with all PMs. Well, we'll come back to a former PM and we're asking, is it now the political obituary? And after the news, we'll speak to my colleague Ian Payne.
Wow.
I've just been told the score of the cricket. Ian Payne, he's not in the jungle. He's at the Perth Stadium watching day one of the Ashes. England all out for 172. Australia, 91 for 6, and a fully refreshed Ian Payne will join us after this. 9:15, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem's announced its latest price cap. Sir Keir Starmer says the UK needs to learn the lessons of coronavirus following the latest report by the COVID-19 inquiry. And a major prostate cancer screening trial started in the UK, aiming to find the best way to detect the disease. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M4 westbound. One lane stays closed for emergency repairs after a lorry caught fire yesterday between Junction 7 for Slough West and Junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead. The Blackwall Tunnel southbound is closed. A vehicle has broken down, so there are queues on the A12 from Bromley by Bow. In Bermondsey, the A2 Old Kent Road is closed in both directions because of a serious accident between the Bricklayers Arms and Humphrey Street, so there are long delays. There are queues in Crystal Palace. The A214 Annerley Hill is partly blocked in both directions. That's because a car has caught fire between Church Road and Hamlet Road. And on the train, Southern have delays of up to 15 minutes and also some cancellations between Victoria and Sutton. That's because of some problems with the signals.
This is LBC.
Season's greetings, festive humans. It's me, a National Lottery scratch card. In case you haven't noticed, it's nearly Christmas and I am a genuinely brilliant little present, like a surprise extra gift. Ooh. You can put me in a card or hide me in a stocking. I'll even roll up and fit inside a cracker if that's what you're into. And I could win them some money. Imagine that. Not such a little gift after all.
Buy a National Lottery scratch card and add some play to Christmas. Gift responsibly. Rules apply. 18 plus.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
At this time of year, we know you're snowed under. But with Halfords' biggest ever Black Friday sale, you handle the shopping, we'll handle the saving. Grab up to 50% off our motoring and cycling must-haves, including tools, in-car tech, bikes and more. Whether it's Christmas gifts, everyday essentials, or just an excuse to treat yourself, we've got you covered. Pop to your local Halfords today or shop online. Offer subject to availability, full T's and C's and exclusions apply. See Halfords.com for details.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it. And there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
For people living with dementia, Christmas can be confusing, overwhelming, heartbreaking. Families are often left to cope alone. But you can help a family reimagine Christmas. Donate to Alzheimer's Society and you can help provide practical support, expert advice and crucial companionship this Christmas. It will take a society to beat dementia. And we can't do it without you. Search Alzheimer's Society and donate today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Well, the number may be up for Boris Johnson, but what are the numbers for day one of the Ashes at the Perth Stadium? My LBC colleague Ian Payne joins me now from Perth in Australia. Ian, tell us about your day. How's it been going? Good morning to you.
Oh, morning. I don't know where to start, Nick, to be honest. I mean, it was all doom and gloom at half-time when we were all out for 172 and they bounced us out and they'd used the fresh pitch and, you know, we're playing this baseball thing where we smash everything. And so we were all feeling a bit down. And then out come the Australians and we've got them at, what is it, 100 for six? And we're 72 runs ahead. It's amazing.
What? I've only seen it on TV. One of the problems seems to be the size of the ground. If I'm going to try and hit a six, this is going to be quite an effort because the ground is so... Is that a fair comment, Ian?
I think now, unless you get my stats right, I'm pretty sure there's only been 1 6 so far. I think that was Harry Brook and it was a massive one. But from sort of, because the thing is, you see that they play AFL here as well, which is Aussie rules football.
Yeah.
And they also play rugby union and they turn it into a completely different place. So from one end to the other is kind of like an oblong and this is an oval.
Yeah.
So
got it.
Two sides of the ground are miles away from the middle of the pitch. But yeah, it makes for an incredible spectacle.
And are you coming towards the end of play? How long to go, Ian?
Well, there's always a good question in cricket. So there are about 16 or 17 overs left for play. It was due to finish about 20 past, or what is it, 20 past. So I would say 6 o'clock here, 10 a.m. your time, something like that.
If they hold them, if they get, say they get another 20 or so runs and another wicket, England would say at least they're holding their own, lastly, Ian.
All you want, and I've been talking about this because I've come out here with the whole family, and all you want... It's just a competition. You don't want anything one-sided, you know? Obviously, I'll take us winning in a one-sided series, but you just want something to shout about so you can have a little go back at the Aussies who were a little cocky at halftime. They ain't so now.
Ian, enjoy the... Don't stay away too long, because LBC's very own Alan Carr is sharpening his knife either for you or me, or he'll probably do us both in Henry Riley, so we had to be very careful. Don't stay away too long.
All right, mate, I won't.
Ian Payne reporting there from Perth. Enjoy the rest of the cricket. Well, we take that, wouldn't we? 100 for six? If we pulled them... That's, as Ian rightly says, that's really competitive cricket, isn't it? Right, let's pick up on what you're saying about Boris Johnson. As I said earlier, the obituary writers, the political obituary writers, have sharpened their pencils and they're saying that it's the end. This is what you're saying on the emails and texts. This comes in from Susan. Boris has been the biggest ambassador of the whole of the UK. He may have made mistakes, wow. But tell me which Prime Minister hasn't. His energy and his feel-good and his optimistic approach attracted so much attention for the right reasons to invest in Britain, making us look like a really innovative, positive country right now. Sorry, country. I think you need a comma there. Right now we look like a miserable country. Who can forget Boris Johnson's Peppa Pig moment? Well, not necessarily one that he'd want to take with him. Darren Parr says, Boris did his best. Every pandemic we'd had previously was beaten. He's naturally positive. He wasn't Mystic Boris with his crystal ball. He could not have foreseen what followed. It is unfair to suggest otherwise. One last one before I come to your your calls on this. One more text before I did that. This comes in from Elizabeth in London. Poor Boris, I still think he did his best. Hindsight, as we all know, is a wonderful thing. What about all the scientists he was being guided by? No one in the world had a plan to deal with COVID. All countries were scrabbling around, says Elizabeth in North London. John's in Enfield. John, your view. How will you remember Boris Johnson? Good morning.
Well, Boris Johnson was a guy that every day he combed his hair, right? But due to that electrical activity, that chaos that goes in his brain, it always comes unkempt.
Right.
Yeah. But basically, I phoned you about this a couple of weeks ago,
right,
where we should basically get the Swedish government to...
Yes, I remember you mentioned. Just remind the listeners how they dealt with it and the differences that came about. I remember that.
Well, for one thing, their COVID inquiry, I think, lasted like 20 months. And it cost about £10 million.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's the first lesson.
We've done 3.5 years. It's currently at 192. It's going to come in at about £208 million.
It's still ongoing. I think it's not due.
Yes. No, that's why I say it will cost £208 million. Yeah, you're right.
But the Swedish judicial system, the medical side is separate from the politicians, and they're not allowed to interfere in any way with any decision making with the medical side of the Swedish. So the Swedish were able to, the medical people were able just to control COVID in the way they thought, and the politicians weren't able to interfere and get little grubby hands on any sort of deals that were going on as well. So we should actually, speak to the Swedish government and get our whole system
changed. Well, it's too late now, matey. We're already 192 million quid.
Well, no, I'm talking about for the future, because you never know. There could be more pandemics coming. But also, we should look at how the Swedish do their inquiries as well, because obviously they've got a different system from doing inquiries, yeah, which is, it's not just the COVID. It's every inquiry that we have.
John, thank you. Only finishing to get more voices on the radio. Thank you for your input. Phil in Swansea. Philip, how happy with this Boris bashing are you?
Good morning, Nick.
Morning.
Yes. Yeah, well, the Trump bashing has temporarily run out of steam, so it's going back to Boris bashing, hasn't it?
Well, no, I think after the Hallett inquiry, it's fair to raise it, but I want to get your view on it. That's what's important to me now, sir.
Yes, sir. My view is that the Prime Minister was going by the words of his medical advisers, I would say. I mean,
well, that's when he finally started holding meetings, you could argue. He was rather late to the party on that, Philip, would appear.
Well, no, I think the blame should be placed where it is, where it lies.
And where do you think the blame lies?
It's on his medical advisers, the so-called political medical advisers,
yeah,
who had an agenda. I don't know what it was, but I wouldn't blame Boris. I think I like the man.
Right.
As a man, but whether he is a good Prime Minister or not is another matter.
Okay. What is it you liked, I'm putting his face dead. What is it you like about him and liked about him as a leader?
I like about him as a man, he was cheerful.
Right.
He had a sense of humour.
Right. Is that what you need to face something like COVID, do you think?
It helps. Put it that way.
Right.
Listen, from my own point of view, I'm retired now. I'm 80 years of age.
Right.
So, pardon my slow speech. But,
not at all.
See, at my age, I didn't give a hoot about COVID.
Right.
I paid as little regard to COVID lockdowns as I could.
But then you would have been in your late 70s, and you would have been in what was classed vulnerable category, but you were fairly blasé about it.
Definitely. And okay. My wife also.
Right.
See, the best way my wife and I have always considered to develop a healthy immune system is to go for long walks in the sunshine and fresh air, which we did.
Well, and of course, I think we were all allowed to do that at certain times, weren't we? But we had to limit them within our bubbles, I refer. Phil, thanks for your input. Give my best wishes to your wife. Let's go to, again, some of the social media that's coming in. Lee simply says, Boris could not win whatever he did. Same subject. Matt in Sidcup. Boris Johnson didn't take something other than himself. What a surprise. You lot were telling us all how brilliant he was. It's almost as if the right wing hates the country while pretending to be patriots. All right, thank you for that. This is quite a few people have said, including here, this comes in from David. How on earth could this inquiry spend so much money? Is there a breakdown? John in Liverpool making a similar point, as does Glenn. So I've asked one of my colleagues to get the breakout. Now, bear in mind, we're at around 192 million so far. Once it gets into 208, where it's likely to stop, that will make it. That will take it past Bloody Sunday, the inquiry into Bloody Sunday. And it will make it the most expensive inquiry in British history. These are the expenditure up until the middle of this year. It's the latest I can get you for. The chair, as it's referred, as in Baroness Hallett, has earned in this period, 3.5 years, £704,000, which I don't think is a lot of money for what she has to do. I really don't think that's a lot of money. That is a hell of a task that woman has on her hands. Legal costs, counsel and solicitors, £48.5 million. Legal costs, section 40, whatever that means, virtually £43 million. Inquiry secretariat, £22.5 million. Modules, whatever that is, £6 million. Every story matters, engagement and commemoration, £14.2 million. Operational costs, I would imagine that's travel and hoteling people. I would have thought, £22.5 million. Others, virtually £3 million. So that's the breakdown as it is currently. We will continue that conversation. But coming up after the news, don't know about you, but the last time that I was in a hospital, had it not been for overseas staff, well, I'd probably still be waiting now. They seem to be the backbone. So what do we make of record numbers of overseas-trained doctors quitting the UK, leaving, experts say, the NHS at risk of huge holes in its workforce, as hostility towards migrants is blamed for the exodus? I'll give you more on the numbers in a moment. But Wes Streeting was here exactly a week ago, the Health Secretary, and we addressed the level of racism within the NHS.
Whether it is people who are black and Asian being abused, assaulted. I think we've got a level of racism in this country, overt racism of a kind we haven't seen for years.
Now, of course, the NHS is for many instances, a microcosm of this country. So if there's rising racism within the NHS, it's probably fair to say that there's rising racism within society. And we'll look at that and ask why after the news. It's 9:30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
Millions of households will see a slight rise in energy prices in the new year after Ofgem announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase, roughly another 28 pence a month, will take effect at the start of January. Ukraine's President Zelensky says he's ready to work with the US on their vision for ending the war with Russia. Details haven't been published officially, but it's reported that it's heavily based on demands by Moscow. And a major prostate cancer screening trial has started in the UK, aiming to find the best way to detect the disease. The trial will use current testing methods along with a new blood test and improved MRI technology. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain for the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
The new LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes, with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
How's the business going?
We're busier than ever, but struggling to get the staff we need.
Oh, recruiting can be such a distraction. We gave Job Centre Plus a try, and they've really helped us out.
Really?
Yeah, it was dead easy. We got our own employer advisor, Julie, who helped advertise our jobs, shortlisted candidates for us, and let us interview at the Job Centre. We've hired some great people, and Job Centre Plus really took the hassle out of it, and there was no fee.
Brilliant. That's straight on my to-do list.
Find out more at business.gov.uk/recruit. Eligibility criteria apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
Waitrose presents...
I really fancy a mince pie.
One man's selfless journey from sofa to kitchen.
I'm getting up.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, and zesty limoncello.
With some cream.
For a number one golden mince pie with juicy golden raisins, cherries and apricots, zesty limoncello, and a dollop of fresh cream.
Limoncello.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Selected stores subject to availability.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Why do you suppose the country is getting more racist? If you'll allow that the NHS is effectively a micronation, it's everything that's great about the United Kingdom, but it's also something that really faces its fair amount of challenges. So when we read record numbers of overseas trained doctors are quitting the UK, leaving the NHS at risk of huge holes, and with hostility towards migrants being blamed for the exodus, here's the numbers for you. 4,880 doctors who qualified in another country left the United Kingdom during 2024. Well, you need context. That's a 26% increase on the previous year. These are official figures from the GMC, or General Medical Council. Why? NHS chiefs, senior doctors and the GMC itself warn the increased denigration of and abuse directed at migrants in the UK is a key reason. Now, you may recall, it was this time last week Health Secretary Wes Streeting was here in the studio to take your calls, and we address this issue. And Mr. Streeting said more needs to be done to bring down racism within the NHS.
Whether it's anti-Semitism directed against Jewish people, whether it is people who are black and Asian being abused, assaulted, we've got a level of racism in this country, overt racism of a kind we haven't seen for years. And
what do you mean? Be a bit more specific.
I've been struck. I've been an elected councillor or MP for the last 15 years. I have not had racism come up on the doorstep of my constituency as often as it has in recent weeks. And people not just saying, I'm really worried about racism, people describing being abused, spat at, shoved, giving racist abuse. And I think we've got a sort of a 70s, 80s style racism that's re-emerged. And we've got to put it back in its box. And government's got a role to play, but all of us have got a role to play.
A 70s, 80s style racism. Now, I appreciate many of you weren't even here in the 70s or the 80s, but I was. Indeed, in the 80s, I was starting to put a career together. And there was a sort of racism, sometimes quite explicit, that will go on in newsrooms and actually even on television shows that would utterly shock you. If I was to play you a show, I think it was called Love Thy Neighbour, but I can't remember. You would be... if I was to play you some of what's called the audio, some of the speaking from that, you would be utterly staggered. If I was to play you some of the gags told by comedians such as Bernard Manning, and, I have to say in his day, Jim Davidson, you would not believe it. Or even Lenny, I think he's Sir Lenny Henry, even he told gags now that I would imagine he would reflect on and think, reflect the modern word, would think, I'm not sure that was quite such a good idea. So we'll talk about the NHS, because that's what's prompted it. And I say again, when I nearly took the top of my finger off, as I've told you many, many times, if it hadn't been for people from overseas, I think I'd have bled to death. So why is it that we're getting like that? Leshmi's in Cardiff. Hello, Leshmi.
Hi, Nick. How are you?
You're the Leshmi I think you are. You're the doctor.
Yes, I am. Hello, Leshmi.
I'm well. Well, I always get nervous when a doctor asks how am I, but I think I'm all right, Leshmi. I've got nothing that I think I need to tell you about professionally, but you need to talk to me professionally about this report from the GMC. What do you make of it?
Very common sense. Doesn't surprise me at all. That's the way it is. It has been for years. I don't know why they're making more of it now. I think potentially because the statistics are reflecting it. But if you ask any frontline doctor in the NHS, it's very obvious.
How long have you been in practice, Leshmi?
I graduated in 2008.
Right.
I did my initial training in London, and then I moved to Cardiff to change to GP training. And everywhere you get it. I get it much, much less because I was born and brought up here and I don't have an accent, but definitely doctors with an accent absolutely get discriminated against by patients, definitely 100%.
You've been looking after people then for 17 years. Has it got better? Has it got worse? Is it roughly the same level as when you first started? How would you calculate that?
I would say it's definitely worse now, especially post-Brexit, because I think for some reason that it has given, and everything we see, it's just given people the unconscious ability to just display it more. There could be a multitude of reasons why, but people are much less conservative about displaying their disdain, I would say, for people who are not of this country or not this colour, and especially those who have an accent, because I get it when people don't realise. I've telephone triage quite a lot of time, and then I'll ask patients to come in and see me, and they'll walk in the door and I can see them double take because they don't realise that the person that they've spoken to is me, because I'm Indian by skin colour. But when you speak to me, they don't register when I sort of introduce, oh hi, my name is Dr. Raj, and they don't quite register it, that it's not an ethnic-sounding surname, and so they'll come in, and most people are fine with it, but I can see it. I can be like, oh, were you the doctor I spoke to? I was like, yeah, yes, I was. And they're like, oh, okay.
Oh, dear God. Right. aware, of course, that this is a live show, so I would ask you, obviously, to moderate any language, but at its most extreme, what are you subjected to?
Me personally, or that I've seen? Everything under the sun.
Either or both, whichever you choose.
A&E was the hardest rotation that I did, and I saw all sorts of abuse and this is in several locations, both in London and in Wales, in a few different hospitals. A&E was the toughest in terms of, you know, seeing hospital staff, nurses, doctors, even sometimes the healthcare assistant, any of them really just being, you know, pushed, shoved, spat.
Did you say spat?
Yes. Yes, in A&E, if you consider the demographic of patients that are coming in, they're often potentially drunk, under the influence. Yes, absolutely. Punched.
And presumably, the P word or the N word then are quite commonplace at times.
Yes, I think I have been refused to be seen by a patient twice. I think I was in East of England, I can't remember which hospital it was, but I picked up a card, I went to see the patient, they're like, I don't want to see you. And I was like, oh, okay.
And lastly, you mentioned your accent is, as I don't want to be offensive, but you absolutely, there's no sort of hint of any overseas origin, but it's very different, is it, if you do have a heavily accented voice?
Yes, because again, I worked with a consultant orthopedic surgeon, and we were doing a ward run, and he was Sri Lankan, and we were doing the ward run, and obviously I was the junior just making the notes, and as this consultant moved on, the patient looked at me and goes, is what he says right? I was like, why are you asking me? This is my first year out of medical school. But they didn't have faith in the consultant because he had a Sri Lankan accent.
Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. Enjoy yourself down in Wales. Leshmi, thank you for that. We're also, take more calls, particularly, you don't have to be in the NHS like Leshmi is. You can also be a patient, of course. Because what is happening in the NHS is, I fear, as Mr. Streeting was saying in this very studio a week ago, is really emblematic of what's happening across the whole of society. But the other conversation we've had, which we started the show with, is the COVID inquiry, which has slammed Boris Johnson's government. Failed. Half the lives lost in the first wave would have been saved if lockdown had been taken place a week earlier. Mistakes were made again and again. Track and trace was a disaster. And the huge total of deaths was in part, says the Baroness, due to decisions taken to respond, and also a toxic and unforgivable and inexcusable handling. You don't get more devastating than that. Two aspects. The cost. It will come in at £208 million. Surely we all knew it was a shambles. That money is only worth it, isn't it, if lessons are learnt. And with the greatest respect to the Baroness, there's not a lot of lessons that have been. Maybe that's in the next stage, by the way. I don't know. That might be it, because that's what we need to learn. And as we were saying at the beginning of this hour, it's the end of Boris Johnson's dreams, I would imagine, of ever returning. David's in Ipswich. David, the point you want to make. Good morning.
Yeah, very simply, I mean, we travel a lot to Germany and friends over there, and the people in business over there had to repay their furlough money.
Right, right.
Now, over here, I know people made considerable profits out of the furlough money.
Well, people set up companies just to get their hands on the cash, didn't they? That's the reality.
Yeah, and of course, that made that big hole that Rachel always talked about even bigger.
Yeah,
and if the money had come back in, it wouldn't have been as bad. I personally don't think Boris did the worst thing in the world. I wouldn't have wanted to be in that position and suffer to think what would happen if this crowd were there and it happened.
Okay, I think that is a fair point. I mean, you say you wouldn't have wanted to. Bear in mind, he jockeyed and manoeuvred and worked tirelessly to get that job, of course, David. It's not that we forced him into it.
No, I agree. But, I mean, nevertheless, nobody knew what was going to happen, and it was a terrible decisions he had to be making. And I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to have to make those decisions, and he did. I'm sure he did what he thought was right. And that's all we can ask of a Prime Minister.
And lastly, to your point, if the current crew were in, you think it would be considerably worse?
Well, they haven't got a clue. There's not one of them, as far as I can see, on the front bench that's ever run a business. And how you can ever have parliamentarians who have no idea on business and then dictating to us, like me, I've run a business, been successful all through our life, and then they're turning around and they're telling us what to do. National insurance and things like that, absolute nonsense. That's killed business.
David, thank you. We're talking about Boris Johnson's stewardship of the country. Sheila in Church Langley. Sheila, you're on the radio.
Yes, Nick. Nick, I think they could have done more, you know, because they, at the time they allowed the race meetings, the football matches, yes. And there was planes coming in from China at that time where the pandemic was rife.
Yes.
You know, those things could have been stopped. And I lost my lovely son, Nick.
I know you did, Sheila. You said that. I'm so sorry.
Had he been vaccinated, Nick, he would have been here today.
Yes, I'm so sorry.
It's brought everything back, you
know.
Sorry.
But
we can't help it. You know, they did do some things, but they just didn't do enough.
To those who say, as many have, Sheila, let's move away, because I don't want to cause you distress, that he should have done a lot... Sorry, the Prime Minister should have done a lot more. How do you... When it touches you so personally, how do you respond, Sheila?
Well, I think hopefully they will learn lessons in case we have another pandemic. Hopefully, Nick. But, you remember awful things about...
I know
Boris.
You do. And here's the final question. And again, let's move away, because I've realised I've caused you distress and I'm very sorry. £208 million of our money, 3.5 years... Money well spent, Sheila?
Oh, definitely not. That should never have gone on that long, and it should never have been that amount of money either. It could have been done quicker, you know, but, you know, like the pandemic and all that went on, Nick, a lot of it is all about making money, you know.
I know. Sheila, it's going to be a tough weekend for you, isn't it, because this is on the news today, and I sense it will probably carry on through the weekend. Really, really tough times for you, Sheila. I really commiserate with you, and my condolences to you. Every time you hear this about COVID, you must, another bit of your heart breaks because you lost your boy. Terrible. Lost your son. Sheila, thanks. Andrew's in Penzance. 3.5 years. It will be £208 million. Money well spent. Good morning.
Well, maybe not, because it doesn't go remotely far enough. So the threat of a virus has been known for decades as the biggest threat to this country, more so than warfare and terrorism. And for decades, successive governments have maintained stocks of PPE. But when Osborne came in, through his austerity programme, he allowed the perishable items on our stocks to perish, didn't replenish them.
Oh, that's right. Yes, I remember
thereby
that.
They created the PPE shortage in the first place.
But you say it's not going far enough. I mean, we have unearthed that, you know, Andrew. So where else do you want it to go?
Well, the next they did was in 2016, they commissioned a report, the Cygnus report, into the state of readiness of this country to address a pandemic. And when it came back saying we're woefully underprepared, rather than do the responsible thing and fix it, they buried that report.
Right.
So they created the PPE.
But Cygnus has been mentioned in this inquiry. So, Andrew, I'll come back to that point. You say it's not going far enough. I mean, respectfully, the two areas you've just mentioned have been included in Baroness Hallett's work.
Okay, then they expected a pat on the back for fixing the PPE scandal by buying yachts for their mates. And then they lied about the vaccine rollout being a Brexit benefit, which it isn't.
Right, OK. All of which has been covered, Andrew. So when you say it's not gone far enough...
Well, because the report only attributes deaths to the failure to lock down quickly.
Right.
But the letting the stocks of PPE drop caused thousands of doctors and nurses to die. And then, of course, we've got the release of old people carrying a deadly infectious virus into unprotected care homes.
I mean, if you have time, Andrew, and you might be a very busy individual, if you pick up a newspaper or you go online, and I'm not, you know, everything you said is of huge importance, but it has all been covered already, or is to be covered because it's already itemised, in Baroness Hallett's inquiry. So your idea, we need to go further. There's not one item, but thank you. Let's see what others make of what you said, Andrew. Have a good weekend down there in Cornwall. 9:46, LBC News Headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Typical household energy bills are going to rise by around 28 pence per month from January after a rise in the price cap. The National Crime Agency has warned people buying cocaine could be indirectly funding Russia's war in Ukraine.
and government borrowing in the first 7 months of the financial year was the highest on record. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Dave Goff. It's slow on the M4 westbound. One lane stays closed because of emergency repairs between Junction 7 for Slough West and Junction 8 and 9 for Maidenhead. In Bermondsey, the A2 Old Kent Road is closed in both directions because of a serious accident between the Bricklayers Arms and Humphrey Street, so there are long delays. It's slow in Bow on the A12 going out of town. There's one lane closed at the A11 Bow Road. That's because a van has broken down. There are long delays in Mitcham on Commonside West northbound to Madeira Road. That's because of the roadworks. On the trains, Southern have delays of up to 20 minutes and some cancellations between Victoria and Sutton because of some problems with the signals. And on the Tube, there are severe delays on the Metropolitan line between Moor Park and Chesham and between Moor Park and Amersham.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Just how much blood is on Boris Johnson's hands and how much of it leads back to all the people who told you he'd be a brilliant Prime Minister? And Shabana Mahmood, making Britain unattractive to everybody.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or our new LBC app.
In her framing shop, Sally's got an eye for precision, plus a computer full of customer orders and precious memories. There are locks on the doors and sensors on the windows. But what's securing it all is BT Cybersecurity, with business antivirus, cloud protection, and security awareness training. It helps stop threats before they strike, keeping sensitive business data safe. Because protecting your business takes more than just toughened glass and a steady hand. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Search BT Business Cybersecurity.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
Waitrose presents.
And the main event.
One cook learns that love doesn't always shout.
Ain't that for me?
Sometimes it whispers.
I saved you the best bit, Dad.
Starring succulent number one free-range turkey bauble, wrapped in dry-cured beetroot smoked bacon, with cranberry jeweled pork stuffing and orange glaze.
Ooh, thanks.
Waitrose, the home of food lovers. Subject to availability and delivery slots, available to order online and in stores from 19th of December.
For the nappies, peekaboos and tea parties. Mess, tantrums and sleepless nights. All those yo-yos, action figures and shinies. Lifts to mates, lifts to parties, lifts everywhere. For each and every one of those teenage years. Let's be honest. You probably owe your parents one. So tell them about pension credit. It could boost their pension income by an average of over £4,000 a year. Pension credit. Credit where credit's due. Eligibility criteria apply.
Amazon has increased funding for employees to £3,000 a year every year for career development. Like Juliet. She's now a trained technician. And to her, the sound of machinery in need of repair reminds her of how far she's come. In 2 years, she's landed her dream job, providing her with valuable skills. That's up to £3,000 every year for career development at Amazon. Eligibility conditions apply.
You're already looking at the Galaxy Watch Ultra with Galaxy AI to provide health tracking and insights. Need another reason to buy? Here's one. You can now save £150 off thanks to our incredible Black Friday event. The upgrade you want and the best deals you probably hadn't expected. But let's not hang around. This deal won't. The Galaxy Black Friday event is on right now. Buy yours at Samsung.com. Purchase from Samsung.com by the 2nd of December.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Quick Ashes update before I come to you, Jessica. Australia, much to the excitement of one of my colleagues, and I admit myself, 121 for 9. So just to update you, and I'll keep it brief because I know not all of you are into cricket, but England were all out for 172 and everybody had their head in their hands. My colleague Ian Payne is down there, 121 for 9, probably with only a few minutes to go, I would imagine, a couple of overs left. There's every chance that Ian, old Payne, might see 20 wickets in one day's cricket. I mean, I've been at the cricket where you sometimes see about 2 wickets all day. And my colleague says it's meant to be a batter's wicket. What the heck? Anyway, it's absolutely even, Stevens. With a bit of luck, England might go in with about 40 runs in the tank, which, by the look of things, is almost half an innings. Incredible, certainly a quarter. Right, another cricket, I understand that, but it does interest many of us. And the best of luck to
the England lads down there and to everyone watching it. Jessica is in Worcester. Jessica, thank you for hanging on. We are writing, or they are writing, the political obituary of Alexander Boris de Pfeffel Johnson. How much will you miss him? Good morning.
Hi, Nick.
Yeah, go ahead, Jessica, your view.
Hi, if you'll permit me my two cents, I'm sitting here and enjoying the show, but I'm just thinking, I think we can all agree that Johnson's government made a huge catastrophic mess of things with COVID, and that cost hardworking people their lives, and it was a result of their incompetence, largely. Mm. And we've had successive governments now who refuse to take crises seriously, crises that impact some of the most vulnerable in society, just like this Labour government isn't taking our economic and climate crisis seriously, and will only continue to see similar impacts from things like the climate crisis and austerity measures that cripple things fundamental to our society in this country, like our health service. And I'm just wondering, is something like a wealth tax not the first step in addressing this? Because how is it fair that in 2022, Rishi Sunak, a millionaire as rich as the king, paid the tax rate equivalent to that of a nurse who was frontline during that pandemic, themselves at risk and saving the lives of other people?
That would have to be a nurse with some years' experience, of course, because you have to get to the salary. You're talking about the same salary rate as once you get to, I believe, is it around £40,000 or something, that you start to pay that tax rate? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yes, sir. I think it's possibly a little bit lower. But it's around that tax rate. It just is one of those things that feels like that level of unfairness in our society. And to be honest, also,
40% of Mr. Sunak's income will be considerably greater, of course. I mean, we do have to put that point to it, don't we?
Yes, of course, yes. But I think it just makes a point about how little we sort of tax income from wealth in this company compared to work. And with regard to a wealth tax, I mean, the proper funding of our NHS system, I understand that COVID was unprecedented, but surely a properly funded NHS system would have helped in some way to deal with that. And a tax on individuals with assets over things like 10 million could raise, like 24 billion annually for public investment.
Jessica,
into things like the NHS.
Can you point to a country where a wealth tax has worked? Because I can take you to countries, European countries, certainly such as France and Italy, where they have attempted this in years past, and actually, in many instances, it's led to a downturn in tax takings because rich people go, or they employ very expensive lawyers, or they just find a way of paying themselves through share dividends or whatever it might be. Because these people, A, are probably smart, B, they're certainly rich, C, they have access to the best tax lawyers there are. So that has happened in other European countries in the past. So can you show me where it's the idea? Let's tax the wealthy, where it's actually worked.
Okay, but is it not just, do you not think it's something, a reform to tax on wealth or maybe not necessarily a standalone annual wealth tax, but just looking at things like maybe, equalising capital gains tax or just other measures? Is it not?
But why should someone who maybe put their house on the block to start a business, has employed loads and loads of people, has created wealth, paid goodness knows how many rents and mortgages and put shoes on children's feet, when they sell the business, be taxed at the same level? How is that fair? Why would you want to start a business?
But a wealth tax doesn't... Quite often I think people are not necessarily... They're thinking, obviously, if you go out and you work really hard and you give into the community and all of those things, I completely support that.
Hmm.
But I think there's this, I feel like this government and previous governments before that are going after the most vulnerable in society when there is another option, and it feels like that option isn't even really being discussed.
Well, I think, Jessica, thank you, and we both have very sound grounds for our arguments. You for the creation of wealth tax, I would argue me for the argument against it. This will be a very live conversation next week when the Chancellor delivers her budget, and we will come back to this because, as you rightly identify, it has been a point under discussion. There's a lot of people in the Labour Party, sorry, in the Labour government, never mind the party, in the Labour government who would support this, some kind of wealth tax, mansion tax, whatever you want to call it. So I sense, Jessica, we might be able to speak again on that next week. I will move on now, if that's okay, because I want to come back to this argument about Boris Johnson, and you can't get more condemning, as I told you earlier. From the Daily Mirror to the Times, the leader writers are united in failure. The Times particularly coruscating, saying any idea that this man can ever return to frontline politics and lead the Conservative Party is completely gone. If you've got time, you want to read it. It says, his failure to grasp the gravity of the coronavirus epidemic sweeping the country caused delays resulting in 23,000 deaths. No prime minister in modern times has faced a charge so specific in its human cost or so damning in its assessment of his flailing leadership. Any suggestion this self-styled jester of the British political scene could return as saviour of the Conservative Party is laid to rest. Point ends. Robert's in East Grinstead. Robert, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hello, Nick. Hi, morning. I'll be very quick. Well, I'll try and slow myself down a little bit. Look, okay. Boris Johnson, I think he did, you know, I was happy with Team A's EU-approved deal. He wasn't, you know, he got us out of the EU in January 2020. All right, he did that. You know, fantastic. ZARS-CoV-2.
Not everyone says fantastic. But
well, yes. Okay, well, maybe things will change there. But, first on the NHS, they do a fantastic job. The mother of my son is out there today as a district nurse. She does a great job every single day. And I have a lot of admiration for the NHS. However, SARS-CoV-2 was not as unprecedented as the previous caller said. There was actually a SARS-CoV-1 kicking around ages ago before, around sort of 2002, 2003.
Right.
Given the known pathology of SARS-CoV-2 by the, which Professor Ferguson knew back in January and February from repatriated flights, it was inappropriate to lock down to begin with. However, we did it. But by the summer, I would say to Boris, Chris Whitty, Patrick Vallance, and Sir Keir Starmer's going along with, you have an obsession. Go and see a psychiatrist, and they're lucky to get away without a charge for manslaughter for all of it.
Well, if you've got time, read the Hallett Inquiry to date. She takes a very different view, Robert, and I think I would argue she's possibly better informed. Certainly she's had access to more material than you or I. But, Robert, thanks for your views, and have a good weekend. I would imagine the England cricketers will have a good evening. The stumps now, having been bowled out for 172, they've got Australia at 1-2-3 for 9. What a day of cricket Ian Payne has watched. That will continue. Now, if you missed any of today's show, listen back on our free Global Player app or the new LBC app. You can stay up to date with all the latest news and opinion. Put your news categories in the order you want. Pause and rewind live radio and listen to a range of podcasts. Download the all-new official LBC app for free from your app store now. That's me for the week. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you Monday morning from 7. Meantime, have a safe weekend.
Thank you, Nick. You too. You do not have to bribe or twist, thank God, the British journalist, for seeing what the man will do unbribed. There's no occasion to. And goodness me, if you needed proof of the accuracy of that adage, then you'd find it today. Daily Mail manages to cover the culmination of Boris Johnson's blood-soaked premiership by failing to mention anywhere in its coverage that they currently pay him £500,000 a year to write a column. While over in the Daily Telegraph, one of the most inadequate men in political history, David Frost, put in the House of Lords by the aforementioned Boris Johnson, claims that the entire inquiry was unnecessary, while on the front page they claim that it proves lockdowns weren't necessary. Wow.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, millions of households will see a slight rise in their energy bills from January after the regulator announced its latest price cap. The 0.2% increase will add around 28 pence per month to the average dual fuel bill. LBC's reporter Guy Stewart has been reading Ofgem's latest statement.
The regulator says wholesale prices are stable and have fallen by 4% in recent months, and that this increase, which is unexpected, is because of government policy and operating costs, including funding the Sizewell C nuclear power plant. It's why the typical household on a dual fuel tariff will be paying 0.2% more from January to March. Ministers have promised to tackle the affordability crisis, transitioning away from fossil fuels.
Public sector borrowing was £17.4 billion last month, higher than experts predicted. It was £1.8 billion less than the year earlier, but it was still the highest October figure since records began. The government said it is working to get borrowing down.
The National Crime Agency's warned people buying cocaine could be indirectly helping Russian arms factories. The NCA says a money laundering network operating in the UK has bought a bank in Kyrgyzstan to evade Western sanctions. It says the funds are then being used to support Russian military efforts. A government minister has moved to defend Keir Starmer following claims he spends too much time abroad. The Prime Minister's in South Africa for the G20 summit, his 42nd foreign trip since entering number 10. It's prompted his critics to coin the phrase, never hear Keir. But the Science Secretary Liz Kendall's told LBC's Nick Ferrari that's unfair.
For the G20, we've announced £400 million worth of deals, export deals, that will back British businesses. The deal with Turkey and Typhoon Jets, 20,000 more jobs here. You, Nick, will rightly ask me what we're doing to tackle small boats. How the hell do we think we can do that if we don't work with our partners right across
Europe?
But
we're not tackling it, respectfully.
Well, we absolutely are.
And the Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, has announced that prescription charges in England will be frozen next year. The charge for a single item will remain at £9.90. In the city, a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 44 at 94.83. The pound buys $1.30 and €1.13. LBC weather, another cold, dry and bright day for most. Some outbreaks of rain in the northwest, a high of 9 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Minutes after 10, and it's almost as if it was planned, isn't it? If you need proof of how corrupt political discourses in this country, you just heard it in that last bulletin, where correctly our newsreader reflects upon the fact that some people are calling Keir Starmer never hear Keir, without mentioning that the reason why he is compelled to make so many foreign trips is to try to repair much of the damage done to our international reputation right across the globe, not just in Europe, by previous administrations. Administrations which the people who would use a phrase like never hear Keir or Boris derangement syndrome or Trump derangement syndrome or Brexit derangement syndrome, they all told you that all of those things would be absolutely brilliant. And now as Keir Starmer, who, as we discussed yesterday, is impressing very, very few people, but as Keir Starmer tries to undo the epic damage done to our international reputation by becoming the first population in history to vote to impose economic sanctions on itself, comparing allies to concentration camp guards in the case of Boris Johnson, by pursuing xenophobic rhetoric to a point where even people previously comfortable with a little bit of light 1970s racism felt their blood curdling. And the bloke charged with trying to undo all of that damage also gets a shooing and a kicking for trying to undo some of that damage by the people who caused it. Welcome to Brexit Britain in 2025. What would you do today if you were me and you'd spent years championing Boris Johnson? What would you do today if you were a newspaper editor or a newspaper columnist, a broadcaster or a pundit, even perhaps an online influencer who had been a fully paid up member of the Boris Johnson fan club? Even perhaps a side order of Dominic Cummings' hero worship. Oh, he's so clever. Ooh, 5D chess. He's such a genius. What would you do today? Daily Mail provides a little bit of guidance on that. They report upon the Hallett inquiry without mentioning the fact that they're currently paying the man responsible, arguably, for 23,000 unnecessary deaths, hundreds of thousands of pounds a year to write a weekly pile of bilge for them. They've also got Nadine Dorries on the payroll, the sort of handmaiden to Boris Johnson. All of whom will carry precisely no consequences, will carry no can whatsoever. If they have a conscience, that is the only punishment they will face for treating the British population with a curious combination of contempt and disinterest. 5 Cobra meetings missed because reasons. Oh, he's Boris. Oh, he's so funny. It was probably, I don't know, five Cobra meetings missed. What do you think of first? What do you think of first? Italy, right? Not just the pictures, but the voices, the calls we took from Italy, telling us in no uncertain terms that these overflowing hospitals were a harbinger of what we were about to face. I mean, what on earth is the question that we begin with today? How on earth did anybody convince themselves that we would somehow be exempt from the horrors visited upon Italy by dint of what? Our special sovereignty? Our box fresh Brexit brilliance? The leadership of Boris Johnson? Remember the footage from Italy and the incredibly draconian measures that were introduced almost immediately as the bodies pretty much did start piling up. And the sense in this country that the people in charge, the people at the top of the pyramid, were supremely and extraordinarily incompetent and inadequate. And it, I mean, I know the answer to the question. What would you do? What would I do? What would you do if you'd had this job and you'd spent years plugging Boris Johnson? Forget about Brexit today. I mean, that's, again, something that you're only going to have to answer to your conscience to, because the British media is never going to make people own the consequences of their dishonesty and idiocy. But what would you do if you'd done it? If you'd said, oh, Boris Johnson's great. Boris Johnson's wonderful. Oh, he's such a good bloke. Oh, he's so much fun. He's on the show tomorrow, going to tickle his toes. Oh, I love him. He's so great. He's so funny. He's so great. He's so funny. Glad he's in charge. He's like a Churchill, isn't he? Oh, yes, he's like a Winston Churchill. He's like a Winston Churchill de nos jours. And yet, the rest of the country could see that this was like having, a tufted blancmange in charge of the most complicated public policy period that the country had faced since the Second World War. I don't know that the gulf between citizens, fellow citizens, friends, family members, colleagues, I don't know that it was ever bigger than with Boris Johnson. The idea that he was anything other than a sexually incontinent serial liar whose interest lay in precisely nothing but his own self.